Earlier today, Donald Trump reported that the FBI had seized his passports, even his expired passports, so more than one. And now many people are saying that he's a flight risk, perhaps because he has a jet that says Trump on it. Hmm. It's a very large one indeed. So I wonder why they would think he would be a flight risk. So, yeah, that's the only reason I can imagine that they would do this. Now, apparently the DOJ is going to be releasing more information on the affidavit. We'll see where that goes. But this is all indicative of they're probably going to criminally charge Trump. Earlier today, I was saying I didn't think it was going to happen. I still, perhaps due to normalcy bias, lean towards there's no way they could pull this off, because it's actually it's getting Trump supporters fired up. But maybe they don't care. Maybe after this raid, it looks way too partisan. Maybe it backfired on them and their only opportunity now is to lean into it. So we'll see. Donald Trump has warned that something terrible is going to happen to this country, and he's offering to help lower tensions. I don't know if that will be enough or what this means, but the fact that Trump said it actually suggests to me it's worse than we probably realize when Trump is coming out saying things like this, because I think he knows. And we'll get into that. We also have Predict-It. Ron DeSantis is now favored on Predict-It to win. And I see a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, but Trump's leading in the polls. Predict-It isn't a poll. It's people predicting, which means if you ask someone who they'd vote for, they might say Trump. If you ask someone who do they think will win, they're saying Ron DeSantis more than Trump, but it's still fairly close according to Predict-It. And it could be because people expect Trump to be jammed up by the DOJ. So we'll get into all that stuff. Head over to TimCast.com, become a member, and you'll get access to our uncensored after-hours show. Those go up Monday through Thursday at 11 p.m. And I also want to announce in less than next week, we are releasing our music video for the song Only Ever Wanted, performed by TimCast. We got Ian jamming some guitar. The song's almost entirely engineered and produced by Carter Banks. So it's really, really phenomenal stuff. It's an original song that I wrote. Carter produced and turned into magic. We got Pete Parada on drums, formerly of The Offspring. Super excited about this. That should be going up next week, so you'll want to check that one out. And boy, am I glad that I lost weight before filming that music video. Thanks, Keto Elevate. Okay, that was an aside. Smash the like button, subscribe to this channel, share the show if you really do like it. Joining us today to talk about the big news is Nick Searcy. Hey.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be here. I usually don't come back places. I'm glad to be back here for the second time.
Oh, yeah,
Most of the time, doesn't happen. We've had enough of him.
So. Yeah, so what do you do?
I'm an actor. And director and a producer and a husband and a father. And that's about it.
All right on. You got any new movies that recently came out?
Terror on the Prairie came out not long ago with the Daily Wire. Awesome. Was released in June. And that's out and ready to be viewed at your leisure. And I've got a movie coming out later in the year called The Old Way with Nicolas Cage.
Ooh.
Two Westerns in 1 year. So
right on, cool. Right on. And you were in that with Gina Carano.
Yeah.
Among others. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Well, look forward to talking about all the news, and we'll get into all the creative project stuff. Yep. We also have Hannah Claire Brimelow.
Hi, I'm Hannah Claire Brimelow. I'm a writer for TimCast.com. I'm also co-hosting Pop Culture Crisis this week in Mary's absence, so check that out at 3 p.m.
Hi, everyone. Ian Crossland from IanCrossland.net. Happy to be here. Nick, I also see you got a documentary behind you. I believe you produced that. Didn't you work
That's
on that
right.
as a producer?
That's right. I produced it, and I conducted some of the interviews. Capital Punishment. It's available at capitalpunishment.locals.com. It's about what really happened on January 6th and the aftermath that's going on.
For sure. I think this is just, forgiveness. And I've been talking a lot about pardons in general. Maybe we can talk about this later on the show. But with Trump coming out, talking about the escalation, I think this is very topical. I'm glad you brought that, too. Mm-hmm. Thanks, man. Hi, everyone.
All right. I am also here in the corner pushing buttons. Love having Hannah Claire. Excuse me. Love having Nick back for sure. I'm excited to get into the news. Let's get going.
Here's the first big story from Newsweek. Donald Trump labeled a flight risk after saying FBI took his passports. Newsweek reports, Trump wrote in a post on his Truth Social platform that the FBI stole the passports, one of which he said was expired during the search on August 8th. This is an assault on a political opponent at a level never seen before in our country. Third world, he wrote. While Trump did not offer any details on why the FBI may have wanted the passports, some Twitter users suggested that it was because the ex-president was viewed as a flight risk. Attorney Seth Abramson wrote in a Twitter thread on Monday that if the news was true, the FBI is acknowledging what I've long said, this is a quote, which is that as a factual matter, Trump is a flight risk. And I just got to point out, perhaps it was the giant 757 with Trump's name on it that made them concerned Trump might be able to leave the country. But I also want to add just very, very quickly as well, for you guys, you know, people like Trump don't live the way we live. Mm-hmm. All right. Donald Trump does not need a passport. Donald Trump is a billionaire. Donald Trump makes a phone call. Actually, Donald Trump probably doesn't make a phone call. When he charters his flights, his people probably call the people of the country he's going to, and they don't need to verify Donald Trump's identity. And the amount of money that he has and investments in many of these countries, they're going to roll out the red carpet for him. People don't realize this stuff. So I'm wondering why this happened. And of course, there's some speculation, maybe that in the documents they grabbed, they didn't realize that a box had Trump's passports in it or something. But I'm just not giving the benefit of the doubt to the FBI. I think they took his passports. I think their only option now is to lean into, if you're going after the king, you can't miss. And so earlier today, I said I didn't think that they would indict him. With the information coming out now that they plan on releasing more information about these affidavits, I'm starting to lean the other direction. I think they might have no choice. But again, man, I really don't know. I don't know. What do you guys think?
It bothers me that the DOJ is like, we oppose releasing the affidavit after they claimed that they were going to promote transparency. I mean, you can't really have it both ways. They're citing national security concerns, but again, it seems like everything is lined up. They just don't want to admit what they're doing.
And don't you have to be charged with something before you become a flight risk? I mean, they haven't really charged him with something.
I mean, look, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a criminal lawyer, but I have watched Law and Order.
Oh yeah, okay then.
The best legal education.
Give it to us straight.
Exactly. No, I'm pretty sure you can be instructed not to leave during an investigation.
But they didn't even do that.
But they didn't do that. Yeah. That's what I mean. Right. It's like I don't know how you can declare somebody a flight risk if you haven't been charged with anything. What's he running from?
Yeah,
but I think Trump said he was declared a flight risk, right?
Well, no. People on social media are saying this. Yeah.
It was nothing formal. It's just the fact that they are prohibiting him from leaving.
Oh, they must have taken it because. That's what
they can't declare him one officially. They're just taking away his ability to leave. Yeah.
But they're not really.
Yeah.
Donald Trump can call Saudi Arabia and be like, listen, I'm coming in, roll out the red carpet, and they're going to do it.
They're like, sure.
They're going to be
bringing a very nice plane. It's one of the best planes.
Best plane.
We'll get you on it. I'll get you drinks. So the question is, this is what's tough. The FBI didn't announce criminal charges. They're going to be releasing more information. They're saying that he's under a criminal investigation for obstruction of justice and the Espionage Act. So I would say, yeah, the FBI can't declare him, or maybe they can't formally seize his passports, so they just sort of took them.
They accidentally took them in the raid.
Yeah, oops.
Who knows?
Now you can't leave.
We had no idea they were in that box that we specifically put them in.
What is this obstruction of justice for what?
I guess it's January 6th. I don't know. The Espionage Act is related to the National Archives.
Well,
the withholding of documents.
It might be the classified document thing, right? Mm-hmm. That they say he has all these classified documents, which he says he declassified, which he could declassify.
Simply by saying it.
Yeah, just by saying they're declassified.
I watched a video earlier with Comey talking with Hillary Clinton, just superimposed, juxtaposed to each other, where he's saying, in her emails, we found 30-plus
110
classified pieces of information in her Gmail account. I think it was all in her Gmail account, saying it shouldn't have been in a Gmail account.
It was on a private server in her house.
Private Hillary Clinton server had 110 classified documents.
Out of 30,000 public records that she did not have the legal authority to destroy.
So we'll keep that in mind, that she had classified documents in her personal server. So let's just keep that in mind. I want to keep that in mind when we're looking at talking about Trump.
And she's not a president. She was Secretary of State, which does not have unilateral declassification powers.
Right.
So here's what I try to explain to people. Imagine you're the president and you're going to negotiate with Gorbachev about nuclear armaments. And you sit down and you say, look, we know you got missiles in Turkey. And you gotta move those. And then he goes, okay, well then what about your missiles that you have placed in around us? Oh, I can't talk about that. They're classified. Sorry. I have no idea. That's insane. Of course the president can decide to tell an enemy about our weapons. He's commander in chief. He has to be able to negotiate that. Mm-hmm. It would be insane to assume he'd be like, let me get back to you and see if I can get the bureaucrats to determine if I, the president, have the authority to negotiate armaments.
That's what would be happening with Biden right now. I don't think that they used to
Biden make it.
Biden probably doesn't know anything about the nuclear codes, but that's because they can't, trust him and they're not willing to admit that. Where I think you're totally right. There's no way for Trump to have been as an effective leader as he could, as he was, without anything to negotiate with. It doesn't make any sense.
But all presidents.
All presidents.
Every single one of them. Yeah. Now, again, I'm seeing these memes go around where it's, you know, it's like there was one meme of like a little girl and she's got like a shocked look on her face. And it's like, if you chanted lock her up over Hillary's emails and now you are defending Trump, let's just admit it was never really about the emails. And then I just, I'm going to respond on Facebook because I waste time trolling sometimes. Or I should say trolling. And I just responded with very matter of fact, sorted, PolitiFact, several sources. Said Hillary Clinton had 110 confidential emails on a private server and they politely investigated and then said there was no intent. Have a nice day. Even though she was Secretary of State with no declassification power. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump. After Kevin Kleinsmith was sentenced to probation for fabricating evidence to justify spying on the president, you can't expect me to believe that Trump has done something wrong. No, the benefit of the doubt is gone, and you need to prove you had a legitimate reason to do this. But still, Donald Trump as the president has broad declassification powers, so I just don't see anything here. Not to mention, the warrant for the search of Trump's home said from the first day of his presidency to the last day of his presidency. How is that constitutional? The Fourth Amendment, it prohibits, you know, unreasonable search and seizure. You need to be able to be like, we believe you have this document that says this thing, mm-hmm. and we're going to prove it. Instead, they're just like, yeah, I'll take it all. Every single thing you got. And,
yeah.
And then an Epstein judge signed off on it. How about mm-hmm. that? I'm sorry, a judge who had been a lawyer defending Epstein's lieutenants.
Totally
want to make sure I'm being clear on that one because it's actually worse than
it's
saying
it's so
Epstein's
much worse.
Yeah.
So
bad. I didn't know Epstein had lieutenants. Who are they?
Yeah, my friend Larry Correa, who's an author, he said, if I'd put that in a book, that the judge who signed this affidavit worked for Epstein, people would say, oh, come on.
The editors would reject it and be like, it's a little too much. Yeah. We can't do it.
Yeah, I wouldn't ever.
Well, and there are so many outlets that are like, we're just going to skip reporting that. We don't want to mention it because it starts to sound as sketchy as it really is.
Yeah,
that's a really crazy story, right? It's all, you know, there's a bunch of viral Viva Fry, I think, posted this. It's a montage.
Yeah.
Or is it a mural?
Yeah, it's a mural. It's whatever.
Mural? It's not really a mural, I guess. It's a it's a montage of
pictures.
All of these verified individuals saying that they've gotten COVID and they're so grateful to be vaccinated and protected. Now, I'm not going to comment on the COVID nonsense. The CDC put out guidelines saying that their policies now for the unvaccinated and vaccinated are the same or whatever. Right. I'm not here to comment on that. I'm here to comment on the identical posting of all of these people around the world makes me feel like there's like one guy behind all the accounts just copy and pasting everything. And then I saw that and I was like, when you guys ever see that video that Deadspin put together where all of the news anchors are saying the exact same thing?
Yeah.
It just feels like that. It's like, it really just feels like there's a machine. Like it's all fake. These people aren't real people. They're not saying real things. They're not having real thoughts. And there are world leaders who are of that, and there are news anchors who are of that, and that's freaky.
It is a machine, and people are being fed a narrative, but the crazy part is it's not fake. It's real. They're real people. They're just allowing themselves to be changed by their superiors.
It reminds me of the phrase party line. Like when I'm researching stories to write for the site, you know, you'll see that AP News put out a story. AP News does that a lot. And then it gets picked up in 87 different places and there's no other original reporting into this. So you just have the party line repeated over and over again, the same statistics, the same quotes, the same perspective. But because it's multiple outlets, they're acting like, oh yes, we're all reporting this very important story that actually only one of us wrote. It's why the theory that there's like one guy putting out the same post for every country, like, doesn't seem that crazy to me because they just copy what the other people are doing.
Dead internet theory. You guys know about that? You know about that, Nick? Dead internet theory? The idea is that sometime around 2016, the internet basically became fake. Like almost all of the posts are made by AI and bots to manipulate public opinion, and the average person doesn't really engage anymore. And I don't know if I would believe that, but I would believe that mass censorship was enacted on such a scale that the average person has no voice and only a small percentage of approved people are actually posting. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much reality.
Yeah. Well, I'm so shadow banned. I mean, you know, my posts don't get very much penetration ever on mm-hmm. Twitter.
Right. I think we see it a lot that when it comes to censorship, high profile people get censored periodically. But it's always the smaller accounts who get hit instantly without notice and without reason. It doesn't make sense. And I hear this from people when I go out and talk, you know, I'll meet some regular guy and I'll be like, I had 100 followers and they banned me because I posted a news story. Mm-hmm. And who are you going to tell? What are you going to do about it?
Right.
So that kind of makes me feel like, you know, if we go back to when Elon Musk was trying to buy Twitter, now he apparently doesn't want to buy it. When that weird shift happened and overnight people associated with like libertarian, conservative, or independent all saw a massive gain in subscribers and the left saw a massive drop off. Really does make you think the dead internet theory might be real and we're just arguing with bots 24/7.
The internet was what? DARPA tech? ARPA? ARPA, it was military technology, basically. I think it was created as a weapon, basically, or is like, it's going to get created, so let's create it first. And it was like...
The internet?
Yeah, and now it's being used like... I mean, I was watching Jimmy, you know, Bright Insight. He does research on, I don't know what his last name is, but Jimmy is his first name. His YouTube channel is Bright Insight, talking about search results coming back. And like, he would search like January 6th, and then he'd say 800 or 8 billion search results. Here you go. And every page he'd go to would be showing him the same results. It would be Wikipedia at the top, a certain January 6th page they want you to see. Then he'd go to like next page, Wikipedia at the top, the same article again on the next page, same thing. Mm-hmm. This is Google. And then he tried a different search engine. I think he used like DuckDuckGo and he was getting the same problem. So I think it's becoming very clear that the military is using it. If it's not the military, I don't know who, but someone is using the internet right now as a tool.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Greater than the masses that are also using it as a tool.
It could be emergent in that special interests and corporations, you know, for one reason or another are pushing in this direction. You can say it's political. You can say it's criminal. You can say it's capitalistic or whatever. But there's an incentive for Google and these companies to do what they do. I honestly think, you know, have you watched The Orville?
Like no.
Seth MacFarlane's space show?
No, I'm not on it, so I don't watch shows that I'm not on.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I feel
sense.
Like that's the opposite of what a lot of actors say. Like, I never watch my own movies.
The Orville started as like comedy Star Trek, and they did a new season on Hulu, which is dead serious. Actually, I think it's really good. They had one episode where there's a planet of only men that are trying to force gender transition babies, and they're like, basically people are smuggling little girls off. It's crazy. But anyway, in one of the later episodes, they talk about how when there's no currency anymore, because in their sci-fi future, they invented matter replicators like Star Trek. And so they're like, there's no more need for money or currency. And so this person from a lesser developed world says, then why would anyone do anything? And one of the characters explains, you know, to do good for society. And then it got me thinking about where we are now in the United States and why people aren't working. Somehow people aren't working. Mm-hmm. They have money. I don't know. You had that CNN news anchor who said that, I can't remember her name, but she said she was quitting as part of the Great Resignation. And so I'm seeing something happen where all of these people are quitting their jobs, announcing it on TV. And I'm like, you must have money where you don't need to work. How are people not working? Well, we heard with pilots, for instance, there's a shortage because they all retire. It seems like what we're seeing right now is what happens to a society when currency is not particularly valuable and survival is easy. Virtue becomes currency. So instead of trying to have cash and use cash to flaunt your wealth, wealth is meaningless. Everybody's got air conditioning. Everybody's got clean drinking water. Everybody's got a hot shower. So what do you have to flaunt? Well, some people will get gold chains and some people will stand up on a pedestal and scream about how virtuous they are. One by one, more and more people start seeing virtue as wealth and virtue as currency. And you get hyperpolarization, cult-like behaviors from the mass media, which ultimately leads to just societal breakdown, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, when I look at these sci-fi depictions of a future with no currency, and I'm like, they didn't see this one coming. What they predicted was everybody would be like, I'm going to make society better. But what they didn't predict was, how does making society better manifest? It manifests with creepy weirdos talking about giving children sex changes and things like that. Mm-hmm. They don't know what better is. Nobody does.
Right. And it becomes subjective. It's exactly. Like your idea of better is not the other guy's idea of better. So, and I think it's also some Atlas Shrugged going on. You know, I think there's some aspect to it. It's like, if you're not going to get ahead, if what you're working for suddenly is meaningless and the money doesn't mean what it used to mean, then why are you going to put forth all that effort? Why are you going to work that hard when you don't have to?
I'll give you a really good example. Timcast.com. I always talk about how we started this not because of money. It's like I started making videos because I care about something. everything has become mission driven. When I was working for that ABC News joint venture, Fusion, they said the future is mission driven storytelling. Now, in their minds, it was going to make them money. And then, you know, like people will click on it. It'll work. And that's a capitalistic way to view it. Ultimately, it goes insane, becomes woke, because woke is the safest path for a lot of these people. For us here, you know, the people who are working here at Timcast are doing it because we believe in what we're doing and we want to do something good. It's very much like virtue-based currency. Now, obviously, you need hard currency so people can eat food and pay rent and all that stuff. Right. But I think, you know, for better or for worse, you're going to have a society built upon who is actually doing good, who thinks they're doing good, and who is doing bad, but thinking they're doing good. How that will end up playing out, there's no guarantee anyone wins, but I can say cheaters win, man. You know, as much as people want to rag on cheating, if you cheat and you don't get caught, if there's 100 people racing and someone cheats, they're going to win. I mean, you look at blood doping. You look at the Tour de France. Who was it? Was Lance Armstrong accused of? Mm-hmm. I don't want to accuse him because I don't know the full details. But cheaters win, and they win for a long time, and they get all the glory and stuff. So
just look at professional wrestling. They've been winning for years, the cheaters.
Mm-hmm. Those
right.
Damn deals.
That's right. I mean, allowing someone to take a chair from the stands and use it.
Chairs should be banned from those arenas.
And the refs not looking. And then we all see it happen.
That's right.
I think once you get a certain amount of cheaters in society that they start cheating each other, and you start to see a more value of honesty. There's this weird simulation. I wish I could remember what it was called. Anyway, I don't want to go too deeply into it, but it shows you, like, it would give you, like, what if you have 99% honest people and 1% cheaters? Well, the cheaters actually win in those situations.
They win in all situations.
Not unless there's cheaters. If it's 99% cheaters, they tend to cannibalize themselves, and then you find virtue coming out of
it. It's hard for them to win against one another.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
But it's also who gets to define cheating. You know, if you have the government that says cheating is actually fair, you know, which is what you have in California, you know, you can't get those people out of office because you can't vote them out. It's not possible.
Well, it's like changing the definition of inflation, right?
But we'll clarify that. I think you can vote them out. The problem is you've got a zombie cult. You've got, like, imagine this. If everybody woke up at the same time and in California and voted, then yes, those politicians would be gone. The problem is these people believe the lies from the media, and there's no convincing them. Like, you can show them every article in the world that Russiagate was a lie, Ukrainegate was a lie. These people still believe Justice Smollett. These people believe the nuclear document story that just came out. There was no evidence. Washington Post cited anonymous sources familiar with what the agents were looking for. And that was fact. Responsible, factual reporting. How do you convince someone, if they keep believing all this stuff after lie after lie after lie, to do something else? You don't do it. I mean, I don't know how you do it.
Well, there's a lot of those people, but there's also a lot of other people in California. There's a lot of people like me that don't believe that stuff. And I'm telling you right now, I think Newsom was recalled. But the way they structured it, the mail-in ballots and everything they did, look what they just did with Gascon. They disallowed over 200,000 votes out of the 200,000 signatures out of the 715,000. They just disallowed those so that the recall didn't work.
So in that, we'll definitely get into that story for sure. Yeah, the recall. They've said that like 88,000 were not registered voters. They said, and then we have to verify those things. But the issue I take with the, like, it's too defeatist for me, man. It's frustratingly defeatist. You've got right now a historical defeat that's supposed to be coming in the midterms. And every time someone comes out and says, no, you can't win, like, then people give up and then they don't vote.
Yeah.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. When in reality, Donald Trump won, and they were, and it caused such chaos and tumult for the establishment that it's brutal chaos. So no, I disagree.
The thing is, though,
look,
he won in 2016 pretty handedly, and we saw time.
Not really.
It wasn't. You're right. It wasn't a landslide.
88,000 votes in between
that
three
was like
states.
A shoestring.
Because they didn't steal enough. I mean, that's why they were so mad in 2016 is they thought they'd stolen enough.
I really don't think so. I think they wouldn't have run Hillary Clinton, who's like, she thought it was her turn. They think they're invincible, and they lost. And I think it's kind of insane to think that Donald Trump actually wins. They have to use the full force of the DOJ to go after him, to jam him up. But then this idea is that Trump secretly won the whole time. They're going after Trump with the DOJ because they have no idea how to stop him from winning. If it was true that they could cheat in the elections, they would not be going after Trump. They would not be raiding his house. They would not be taking his passports. They'd sit back and laugh because they're the cabal. But the reality is Trump got 74 million votes. He got 12 million more votes than last time. Now, I certainly think we can take a look at 2020 because, I've seen all the stuff that came out in 2000 Mules, and I think there are questions for sure. But the reality is COVID lockdown, sports are gone, movies are gone. And then I get to watch all of my skateboard friends who don't know what Supreme Court justice even means post videos of themselves dropping mail-in ballots for Joe Biden. And then what happens is Donald Trump comes out a month later telling everybody that's not actually why he lost, and then they lose the Senate because of it. Trump won in 2016. Trump and the Republicans in the establishment in many states voted to change rules that heavily favored Democrats, whether they realized it or not. Probably a lot of them realized it was going to happen. Now they have to use the FBI and the DOJ to go after Trump because he will win in 2024 unless they weaponize the DOJ against him, because they don't have control of the election system.
See, I disagree, because they're not just going after Trump. They're going after everybody who supports Trump.
Which proves their desperation and inability to control an election.
No, which proves that that's part of the cheating. They're trying to neutralize all the people that do support Trump.
If they could cheat, why would they need to go after Trump's support, and why would they need to try and indict him?
Because they cheated in 2016 and it wasn't enough. And they know now that it's even worse.
That makes no sense.
It makes perfect sense to me.
They lost in 2016. Then they sent Russiagate after Trump. They sent Ukrainegate after Trump. They made up lie after lie in the media over and over and over again.
And Tim,
that worked.
But Tim, you just said Trump got 12 million more votes.
That's right.
In 2020 than
and
he got
Joe
in
Biden
2016.
Got more.
You don't think that happened because they cheated.
There's
no way that Joe Biden got 81 million votes.
You're wrong.
There's no way. He got 20 million more votes than Obama.
That's right. Did Obama have a pandemic? Before Obama, did they shut down movies?
But the pandemic allowed them to do the mail-in ballots.
And mail-in ballots gives huge advantages to urban centers, regardless of anything else. So if your argument is that it was cheating to change the election system, like in Pennsylvania, by implementing universal mail-in voting, I understand your point. The issue I take is when people started claiming widespread fraud and things like that. And the issue with it is
they didn't need widespread fraud. They needed fraud in six counties.
So to clarify then, that is what I refer to with the idea of widespread fraud. The issue is it's extremely easy for Democrats in six counties to spend tons of money to go door to door and say, fill that out, put it in the box right there. Did you do it? I'll wait. Republicans can't do that. When that happens, it is extremely easy when you've taken away people's jobs, when you've taken away their entertainment, when you've blamed Trump the entire time, when Donald Trump started doing pressers nightly, CNN and all these other outlets, immediately they canceled showing his live events because it was improving his ratings.
Right.
The whole goal was to manipulate people into voting in their direction. I'm flabbergasted at the idea that Trump did win in 2016, but people still think they cheated, which I don't understand. He won. He literally won.
They've been cheating for decades, Tim.
But
they didn't just start in
2016.
I'm talking fraud, voter fraud. They've been stuffing ballots. They've been fine. Look at what happened with the Minnesota Senate race with Al Franken.
Trump is evidence of the contrary.
What happened with Al Franken in Minnesota?
Well, they kept finding more votes. That's how Al Franken got in the first time. It's like he lost. And then they said, oh, we found these 500 votes that were in the back of a church, or they found something in the back of a car. They found enough votes. And they've been doing this for years. They've been doing it since Kennedy Nixon.
I think it's not out of the ballpark to suggest that it's definitely possible that people have been cheating voting systems since the dawn of man. But without hard evidence, it's impossible to make valid claims.
And
it's people that cheat are very good at hiding the evidence, which is, why
it's
good
even,
criminals
it's
don't
that.
Get caught.
I'll tell you what bugs me is there's a lot of stuff that came out in 2020 that was easily proven false. And it's frustrating. There was that that video of ballots being pulled out from under tables. And it was just like, if you watch the actual security footage, you watch them take ballots and put them in boxes and put them under the table. And then you watch for several hours, they pull them out and then they start counting all at the same time. And I'm like, those ballots came in the same, like normally. And people were like posting these memes claiming that the ballots came out of nowhere from under the table. And I'm like, watch the full video, please. But what's really frustrating is, for one, I fully support an inquiry and investigation into all of the elections, every single one of them. After a year and a half, there's nothing to show for it. I mean, I've had multiple people on to talk about this over and over again, and it's surprising to me that despite causing the defeat of Republicans in the Senate, Republicans still keep saying over and over again that they can't win. It's like, bro, November is in 3 months. You need to be telling people the opposite. You need to be telling them you can win. You're going to win. Make sure you get every single one of your friends out to go vote. Instead, you've got people coming out being like, what's the point? You're going to lose anyway. That to me is insane.
I'm not saying you can't win. I'm saying they're going to cheat. You have to overcome the cheating.
I think
you have to find it whenever you can.
How come they've only found they found circumstance or they found questionable matters? What happened to the Arizona audit? What's going on? Like, we actually have those guys go down and do that full thing. We had constant talk about it. It's coming next week. Look, I have no problem if an audit actually happens and they find evidence of something, by all means, please bring it out. But to me, it is just insane that this line of thinking destroys the ability of Republicans to win. And after a year and a half of constant talk, there's been literally nothing.
What you just said, if an audit actually happens, it hasn't actually happened.
So the Arizona thing with all the color coordination and the big tables and the millions of dollars wasn't an audit.
And I don't know what it was.
I think Trump supporters have wishful thinking that they can't believe that outside their bubble, people hated Donald Trump. Like, they haven't gone to a city and seen Trump derangement syndrome. I've seen Trump derangement syndrome to such a degree. I can genuinely believe that, as I said to Steve Bannon, when I see a guy that has never uttered the word politics in his life, film himself holding his mail-in ballot and walk to a mailbox while saying, it's time to do what's right and vote. And I'm like, this guy doesn't know who Ruth Bader Ginsburg is. He doesn't even know what the phrase Supreme Court justice means. And somehow he went out and voted. I'll tell you why. They dumped tons of sand into the skate park so he couldn't skate anymore. And when he showed up, they said, it's because Donald Trump failed to address the pandemic. When every facet of your life is shut down and the media tells you it's Trump's fault, there's nothing left to do. People are bored. They have nothing.
I was in California when they dumped the sand into the pits out there. Everybody knew that was Newsom doing that.
But people, when they go and they look to the TV, and obviously I'm speaking in generalities and say everybody. Obviously the people who hate Newsom, they're Republicans. Republicans weren't going to blame Trump for this. But my normie friends who have no idea what's going on, they don't know who Newsom is. They've never heard the word Newsom before. They turn on the TV and they're like, because of Donald Trump, the pandemic is worse. And they're going, dude, I just want to skate, man. And then along come the Democrats knocking on the door being like, well, then you better go vote for Biden, because if Trump stays in, you're never skating again. And they film themselves doing this stuff.
Well, hell, that's more defeatist than me saying that the cheating. If everybody's that stupid, then there really is no hope.
Well, there is. It is doing shows like this. It is telling people to go and tell their friends. It is telling people to go and share as many videos as possible. It's telling people to engage in polite discourse and be careful about how you address people who are in the cult. And it's about telling people definitively Trump won the first time in 2016 because they were arrogant and they were laughing about how Trump could never win. And then he did. And then they went nuts in the other direction saying Trump will win, Trump will win. And then they managed to get these votes. I don't think Joe Biden mustered the votes. I think Donald Trump got votes against him. I think Donald Trump was anti-elected. I think what happens is you take away movies, sports, you take away events. Every major venue was shut down. All the skateboard companies were like, everything's closed. Businesses were destroyed. And what do? They turn on MSNBC, ABC, NBC, CNN, who all say one thing. It's Trump's fault. You have to imagine that will work. And if that messaging is happening and we immediately went from that into the special election in Georgia. They even showed on like CNN, a guy outside a voting station, polling station saying, I'm not going to vote because they cheated anyway. And then I'm like, there it is. Thanks to this narrative, you've just suppressed your own vote. And sure enough, Democrats got 50-50 in the Senate. I think there's nefarious BS that happens at the highest level of politics. I think these people play dirty games all day and night. I think there's trading tit for tat for rule changes. The Pennsylvania Republicans did a deal with the Democrats to implement universal mail-in voting because they thought eliminating the down ballot vote would benefit Republicans, not realizing universal mail-in voting would basically destroy their chances of winning, either because they hated Trump, they wanted to cut a deal, or they were just really dumb. But that literally happened. Democrats won in Pennsylvania because of universal mail-in voting, because Republicans in October of 2019 agreed to it through a formal process. It was challenged. The Supreme Court of Pennsylvania recently upheld the constitutionality, which I think is wrong. You can argue their ruling was incorrect. You can argue that's cheating. I hear you. But I just think it's important to clarify, because we're 3 months out from the November midterm election, and I am really, really trying to make sure that everybody has the full charge, storm into battle mentality of getting all of their friends going out and proving that they can win.
Do you think there's a significant part of the Republican Party that is part of the swamp that hates Trump?
I think that's most of them.
That's most of them.
Most of them. That's right.
Which is why some of the Republicans have agreed to some of the things that you're talking about.
But I think it's important to clarify what cheating is. Right? Because there are people who think there's servers in Venezuela. There are people who think that the ballots weren't real ballots in the first place, like they came from China and things like that. And that was the big narrative after the election. The narrative, so, you know, clarifying what it means. When Time Magazine publishes an article called The Shadow Campaign to Save the Election, and they literally call it a conspiracy, I'm like, okay, if you want to say it's rigged because of the Time Magazine article, I get it for sure. But I think it's important to say that there are establishment policies and procedures that negatively impact the populist left and right chances for winning. I think that powerful elites in both parties desperately want to stop Trump, and they're cutting deals to change policy and procedure that negatively impact the chance for Trump supporters to get in. And then you take a look at what's been going on. And I think right now, in the past several months with the primaries, with the Trump America First candidates winning across the board, I think this shows outright you can win, that you should not be holding on to these ideas of they're going to cheat or whatever. It's like, whatever is going to happen, you just need to get all of your friends and go vote, whatever you think can happen. But I just want to stress, I think the fact that we just saw Carrie Lake win, and it was a nail biter, because at night she was down, and I was like, come on. And then she wins, sweeping the entire state. It's no surprise Maricopa was almost going the other direction, because it's very urban liberal. It's very, you know, Democrat leaning. But she ends up sweeping across the board. Joe Kent wins. All of these Trump MAGA candidates are winning. If the party really had the power to stop them, these guys would not be winning. If Trump could win in the first place, they wouldn't. Then it proves he can win. And I'll stress it again. They are trying to, it appears, indict Donald Trump because they can't stop him from winning. So I'll leave it at that, because I don't want to just keep ranting. Every time someone comes up with this, it's like we have to go into a full tirade explaining, you know, my views on this. But it's primarily because November, the election is less than 3 months away, and everybody needs to have in their hearts, you can win. I don't believe that narrative.
I hope you're right. I don't agree with you, but I hope you're right.
Carrie Lake just won.
Something comes up.
No, that's great.
The problem, it's not going to stop me from voting. I'm still going to vote. Is when that there's a corporation called Dominion, or whatever you want to call these different corporations, that tally the votes on their digital machines behind the scenes. The problem that people make is when they come out and they say they cheated, because you don't know. They're doing it in secret, so you don't know if they're cheating or if they're working honestly. The problem for me is the not knowing. I think that needs to be transparent, so we can verify whether it was accurate or inaccurate.
I agree.
I think this is the most important point. Dominion should not be, our voting machines should be all open source, publicly available. Ian is,
and why aren't
correct.
They? Well, that's a rabbit hole that we could definitely ponder on. Yeah.
This
you know,
is a favorite topic for Ian.
It's crazy to think. But good question. I mean,
but it's the most important thing said of anything pertaining to any of this. At the end of the day, regardless of what you think about the election, what needs to happen is, we need to have sweeping reform on our election systems that if we're going to go electronic, the source code has to be publicly viewable and very easily accessible. Mm-hmm. And even then, let's be real. Who's going to understand the source code? But this means everyone will be allowed. So there's equal playing field. Every political party can hire their tech specialist to review it. That's what needs to happen. Or paper ballots.
But with the entire Democrat Party and half the Republican Party opposed to that, how do you think that's ever going to happen?
I mean, I think that the Republican Party knows their base likes Trump. I mean, it's impossible. Think about Wyoming's coming up this week. Liz Cheney is trailing Harriet Hageman like there's no tomorrow. I mean, like, there is no recovering from that race. I mean, it would really take a very serious landslide, even with there are like rumors that there'll be Democrats who will vote in their primary. It's not enough. It's a Republican held state. I think that even though there are parts of the party that don't support Trump, they have seen the tides turn. I mean, it's almost impossible to deny that Trump's popularity is solid, and they risk their own seats by trying to ally themselves with a narrative that's losing with their voters.
Wyoming is the number one Trump supporting state. So I don't even know if they have enough Democrats to actually swing this election.
They do not.
Yeah.
They don't
have that many people.
But there was a poll showing Democrats were planning on voting for Liz Cheney.
From the University of Wyoming.
I think what we need to realize about our election system is that the whole thing, elections are not as simple as someone walks up, signs a ballot, hands it in, and then we cross our fingers, we got the votes. This is not high school. There are backroom deals. There's gerrymandering. There's parliamentarianism. There's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into this. The redistricting of states. It's like, it's, hey, elections have consequences.
Based on the census, which they admit they get wrong. I mean, it's just crazy.
So the reality of it is when, in Pennsylvania is the best example, they changed the voting law to implement universal mail-in voting, seemingly in violation of their own constitution. And we had Sean Parnell on talking about this, that they actually initially, they changed the language of the bill they were going to introduce because they realized it violated the Constitution. A lower court actually agreed with them and said, we think this will be found, you know, sustained on the merits. And then ultimately got thrown out for standing just before 2020. Then it was found earlier this year to be unconstitutional. The voting system, universal mail-in voting in Pennsylvania, was deemed by a lower court unconstitutional. The Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, I believe it was the Supreme Court, just upheld it as constitutional, saying nothing in the Pennsylvania Constitution forbids universal mail-in voting. That's an argument to make in court. The Constitution says absentee ballots must be for these reasons. And their argument is mail-in voting and absentee are not the same thing. Hmm. Okay, well, that's ridiculous. But this went through a legal process, and now we've got a very serious problem in this country as it pertains to Pennsylvania, but that finally made it through. It's going to be interesting. I think one thing that needs to happen is Republicans need to realize it's an uphill battle with mail-in voting. And if that's the case, y'all better start driving to all of your friends' houses as soon as early voting starts. Because the Democrats, this is what I try to explain to people. In one unit in Manhattan, you might have 1,000 voters. One building. And two people can knock on all of those doors in a day. And they knock on the door, and there's an answer, and they say, you got your mail-in ballot, it's right there, why don't you fill it out? All you got to do is put it right here in the mailbox by your door, and the mailman will come take it. Or you just throw it under your floor, or drop it downstairs in your mailbox, mailman will come and take it, you don't got to do anything. That works. If a Republican wants to do that, they got to drive in a rural area, what, you know, a quarter of a mile, every house they go to get one or two voters. So this is why I think universal mail-in voting was entirely negotiated by Democrats to benefit themselves. You can argue the Republicans in Pennsylvania sold out Trump because they hated him, but they got a deal too. They had that down ballot thing where people in Pennsylvania could just vote Democrat and it would give all the Democrats their vote. Republicans thought by taking that away, they'd end up winning smaller races, not realizing they were sacrificing basically winning ever again. But let's advance from this topic so I don't just beat a dead horse, because we do have this story from the South China Morning Post. Civil war and dirty bombs. FBI and U.S. Department of Homeland Security on alert for threats after raid on Trump home. U.S. law enforcement agencies prepare for potentially violent fallout from FBI raid on Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. FBI and DHS identify multiple articulated threats and calls for the targeted killing of judicial, law enforcement, and government officials. Yo, there's a... There's another story from Axios that goes along with it that I don't even know if I can start getting into because the language used by this guy is so egregious. Pennsylvania man arrested for threatening slaughter FBI. This is...
What?
It's... I don't know. You guys ready to drink? Civil War?
Oh, my.
So I said it the first time in the title of the South China Morning Post article, but I'll tell you this. While the FBI is claiming there are these very real threats and that they're concerned about them, Jane's Revenge has admitted to engaging in terrorism. They've taken credit for this. Mm. And where's the FBI? I'll tell you where it is.
No, it's just Marjorie Taylor Greene trying to get them declared a domestic terrorist organization. I mean, the FBI is not just, it's literally her. I mean, I'm sure she has support in Congress, but like no one is taking action against James Revenge. Remember when, when you're reading the headline, they're like, they're threatening government officials. Do you remember when that guy showed up at Brett Kavanaugh's house? I mean, they're acting like, you know, violence is one-sided, which it really is not in this country. And obviously, I think most threats come from extremists that don't represent the majority of people on either side of the spectrum. But this is very bizarre, but we forget that it's double-sided.
I think it's actually simple. If you're the FBI and you're raiding Donald Trump, the right is very mad at you. If you're the FBI and you're investigating Trump for Russiagate, the right is very mad at you. And so imagine you're sitting in your chair and you're, reading the news, and all of a sudden Antifa is just screaming, they hate you, you're evil, you're corrupt. And then people on the right are not really saying a whole lot. You'd be like, man, these guys are crazy over here. They won't stop talking about how they want to do evil stuff. This is what the FBI is basically doing. For one, this is an example of their overt political bias. They engage in weaponized politicking, going after Trump for Russiagate, clearly fake. The FBI, Kevin Kleinsmith, I believe his name was, altered an email fabricating evidence to justify spying on the Trump campaign. Mm-hmm. Then Trump supporters get mad at the FBI, say you're all corrupt. Then a bunch of other FBI agents who are not involved and don't know that this corruption is occurring just think the Trump supporters are crazy because, hey, I didn't do anything wrong. Then the FBI starts pointing at the people who are pointing at them, and they're completely ignoring Antifa and the far left. And cherry on top, they're getting all their news from the corporate press who's been actively defending, you know, Antifa and the left to a great degree, not all the time, but to a great degree. So it's not so much, I would say, that you need to be concerned about a conspiracy, but an emergent phenomenon where these are the things that are causing the FBI to be inflamed, to target Trump supporters and the right.
Well, they've drummed out over the years. They've gotten rid of the people in the FBI that were there, that were not willing to do this kind of thing, to demonize people that support Trump. This is part of just demonizing anybody that disagrees with the powers that be. And that's what they've been doing since January 6th. It's what that's why they've been terrorizing American citizens who just went to Washington on January 6th and waved flags. And that's why when you have an actual person who is camped outside of Brett Kavanaugh's house and is going to kill him, that mentioned for a couple of days, but then they make these sweeping pronouncements about all these threats. It's the same thing as when they declared all the parents that went to school board meetings as potential domestic terrorists. Everybody that disagrees with the weaponized FBI, with you know, the government's, the FBI has become our Stasi now. They are just investigating people who they consider to be enemies of the administration, enemies of the government, people who disagree.
Why aren't they going? Why do you think they're just not going after Jane's Revenge or the left? I mean, maybe they are. They just don't care.
They absolutely don't care. They agree with Jane's Revenge. They're not going to investigate them. Just like they, you know, the BLM and Antifa riots in 2020 and 2021. They didn't treat those people the way they're treating the January 6th people.
So we've talked about something a bit in the past couple of weeks that if Joe Biden were to pardon all of the January 6th people, that his popularity would spike. Democrats would start cheering and clapping about how gracious they are. And Trump supporters wouldn't have much to say other than, well, that was the right thing to do. Thank you for doing it.
Go ahead.
They can't do that. The Biden would never, ever do that. And I don't think his Democrat base would cheer that. They would be furious.
I disagree. They don't care for moral logic. They care for winning. And if Joe Biden does something, they'll say, we are good people. While Donald Trump was chanting, lock him up, we're doing the right thing and reaching out an olive branch because we are honorable. That's, of course, what they would do.
I don't think so. I don't think you understand how deeply they hate people like me.
I think
that, I do, but I think they care more about – they wouldn't want to claim defeat. If Joe Biden came out and said, look, tensions have gotten way beyond our control in this country. We need a sign of good faith, you know, and then he says something like what these people did on January 6th did was wrong. However, the continued prosecution is only ripping this country apart and we need to find a path towards, you know, clemency and, you know, commutation for these individuals so that we can learn to heal as a nation. I think the left would absolutely have no choice, the Democrats, but to agree with Biden. Otherwise, they'd be claiming defeat and they're not going to do that. They're not going to admit they're wrong. They're going to say, see, we were the good guys the whole time. It's Trump who's bad and we're honorable. And then Trump supporters could only say, well, that was the right thing to do. Thank you, Joe Biden. Some might be like, it's political. It's a political move. But it would be such a tremendous and gracious move. You'd have no choice but to be like, well, OK, all right. You know,
that's the most outlandish alternate universe I've ever heard of.
You think the Democrats would be angry?
Absolutely. They're bloodthirsty. They want everybody in jail. They want everybody that went to Washington on January 6th in jail forever.
I agree, but my point is that when faced with having to admit that their guy betrayed what they truly wanted, they're more about virtue signaling. They wouldn't throw Biden under the bus. Biden is implementing policy that's damaging to our energy sector, and they claim the opposite. It's like Biden literally is enacting policy that causes gas prices to go up, and they come out and they say, Biden can't control gas prices. Then when it comes down, they're like, Biden did that. There's no moral consistency. Whatever Biden does is good, and they were right and just. So that's why, you know, and look, I'm not trying to argue that it's absolutely true. I'm just trying to get your thoughts on it because, you know, one of the things that we were bringing up is how do we de-escalate tensions? Is that one of the ways we do it, right? Biden coming out and just being like, the only way to simmer things down is to pardon these guys.
Well, he's never going to do that. But I agree with you that if he did, that might work. But I don't see that. Sometimes, I don't see anything like that happening.
Sometimes I think if he were to do that, it's the only way the Democrats would admit that he is like in early stages of dementia or maybe not early stages. Yeah. Because then they would be like, see, he's really not in a position to be doing this. Like, I think you're right. It would be extremely difficult for a huge section of the Democratic Party to justify this to themselves. I think Tim's right. There would be some who would be like, well, because of this illogical twisting of argument, then this is why it makes sense to do that. But I do think that there would be enough who would say, you know, no, he should only be pardoning, you know, African American men who have done this, like to pardon a majority white crowd that went to this, you know, like it would be really against narrative and upstream. And that's where I think they would be like, well, I mean, like if he had done it his first day in office, maybe, because they had enough, they know he's going to be in office for a little while, but he's almost halfway through at this point. We can all kind of tell things are not right. We do not expect him to run again. If he were to pardon all of January 6th prisoners, which of course I wish he would, he would probably just get, well, it's time for Biden to retire. We didn't really want him here anyways.
And how do you get from the worst attack on our nation's democracy since the Civil War to, I'm just going to pardon everybody?
It's COVID. We got to acknowledge that COVID caused massive strain and stress on people's psychology. It's not just shutting down what happened as a result of COVID and the response to COVID, but the COVID virus, when I had it, I was angry, man, and I was stressed out. And Tim and me got into it one day. We were yelling. Like it causes people to feel like crap and to get mad. And so many people went nuts over the last 2.5 years. Like, pardon all those people that were smashing up buildings in the summer of 2020. Pardon them. Pardon Hillary Clinton. Pardon James Clapper for lying under oath. Pardon the people that are sitting in solitary. No. We need to scrub clean the last 200 years of insanity that we've declared on ourselves. The slaveholders, pardon them all, man. Pardon all the runaway slaves. Pardon them all.
Ian, like, when
just
do you
pardon
stop
literally
this,
everybody.
Though?
Just, like, fresh like, start, everyone. You're
that's
out.
Right.
You snap your fingers like Thanos.
Would you keep pardoning people after that, though? Like, I understand the instinct to want to be like, let's just start over. But I think that, like, the memories of everything that's happened runs too deep. You wouldn't actually give people a sense of justice or satisfaction. It would just be like, we're making the score zero, except we all secretly know it's not zero.
I don't think Abe Lincoln thought he was doing, like, what was
politically correct when he freed the slaves. He just knew it had to happen.
He said he to keep the union together. He wouldn't have pardoned the slaves if he could have kept the union together. He did not.
Yeah.
It wasn't about morality for him. It was about preserving the sovereignty of the nation.
And
the economy, basically.
And it was also about destabilizing the South, because the Emancipation Proclamation was basically saying to all of the slaves, which were in Southern states because the North states were free, rise up against the government there. It was weaponization of, if anything. I mean, look, Abraham Lincoln got in. The Civil War had technically already begun. Bleeding Kansas was going on. Several states had already seceded. And so he waited several years to actually.
The free the slaves thing wasn't a civil war. It was like the Civil War was going to happen anyway. And then he saw it as an opportunity to do what he thought was right.
I think you're wrong about
that.
And
he took a bullet for it. I mean, it wasn't like free the slaves and then the Civil War started. It was like years later that they decided to free the slaves.
It wasn't.
Your argument that he maybe wanted more troops and he wanted Southern slaves to fight on the side of the
North. Well, it was about destabilization. Yeah, it's partly about destabilization.
It might have been.
Lincoln was a deeply racist individual. Like, read the history of Abraham Lincoln, read about Liberia and like the letters that Abraham Lincoln wrote. This shouldn't be surprising to anybody. I'm not trying to impugn the honor of Abraham Lincoln. I'm just pointing out back then, like, literally everybody was racist. And so people like to look back and base past history and morality on modern sensibilities, which is just not correct.
Yeah.
Right? Abraham Lincoln did not want to be the president during the collapse of the United States. And so it was very political. I mean, the dude suspended habeas corpus up through a corridor from D.C. through Maryland to Pennsylvania, where they were just arresting people without charge and holding them indefinitely. This is not a guy who believes in freedom and doing right. It's a guy about who believed in winning by any means necessary.
I think the slavery thing was like a moral thing for him.
No, he said, if I could have kept the Union together without freeing slaves, I would have done it. I mean, he was completely dedicated to keeping the Union as a nation. I think we're taught that in school that it is about slavery and it's about morality because our sensibilities have changed. And I think if you were president now, in that time, you would have behaved differently. But for Abraham Lincoln, it wasn't about slavery. And I think we're just told to turn a blind eye to that. It was about preserving the Union.
The economics, yeah. He wanted the money from the South.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's complicated. I mean, there's a really great letter Ulysses S. Grant wrote where he said that the Union sacrificed blood and treasure to admit these states into the Union. And they swore an oath. By seceding, they were in violation of their oath and effectively stealing that blood and treasure for themselves. And so he wrote that anyone, any man, has a right to rebel against his government or leaders or authority or whatever. Just know that if you lose, you will have to live under their command and penalty from that point forward. So it's interesting actually reading what these guys wrote about what was going on back then. It's truly crazy stuff. Let me jump to this next story. We'll keep the conversation going. Donald Trump warns terrible things are about to happen to the U.S. This to me actually is more serious than I think a lot of people probably realize on the surface. The former president said that because the temperature has to be brought down in this country, he's offering any assistance to the DOJ to try and calm things down. He says, if it isn't, terrible things are going to happen. Mm. I think Donald Trump realizes when you see the story from Axios about a guy threatening FBI agents, about a guy going to an FBI field office, just the fact that they're going after a president, it's not so much that Trump realizes he's in trouble, that they're coming after him, but people are ready to snap in this country. And the left has long been ready to snap. They've been snapping for a while. And now the right's ready to go out. When Trump says something like this, this creates in my mind an image of Trump sitting down at a desk, like dead serious, more serious than he's ever been, being like, this is bad. This is real bad. And I think when Trump notices it, it's probably worse than we even realize. I have to wonder what a Secret Service detail is telling him or the things that he might be seeing. And I think the left's view of this is probably like, Trump's trying to save his own skin, right?
Yes, he's saying there's a big problem coming for us, when what he means is for me. And then people have a tendency to externalize their own fears when they're really in trouble.
Like, I don't think that's what it is. I mean, I think he's talking about food shortages. I think he's talking about inflation, that it's all going to get worse, that tensions are high now, but it's going to get much worse.
And
I think that part of it's going to be Biden's already announced, yeah, we're probably looking at some food shortages. He did that months ago. I mean, it's going to get bad. And then when you start having bread lines in America, you see, you know, I see news reports where all the food banks are now have, you know, 40, 50% increase in how many people are lining up for food. I mean, if that starts happening, then you're going to see violence.
Do you think that was the richest country that Earth's ever seen? Have you given up? Do you feel like it's inevitably going to fall apart and then just sort of
I think that there are forces within our government that are making it happen, that want it to happen. They are trying to force a civil war. If you accept the premise like I do, that the left is literally trying to destroy this country. They hate it. They hate the Constitution. They hate the country as founded. They've been teaching our children for decades in school that this is a racist, evil country. If you accept the premise that they want to destroy it, what's the quickest way to do that? The quickest way is a civil war.
And not only that, the one way to get rid of a Constitution.
Yeah.
So you can destroy a civil war by you can destroy a country by eroding it. The problem is when you have a Constitution, they struggle. You know, 100 years on, they've been trying to get rid of the Second Amendment, and boy, it's just not really working out all that well because there's new advancements, new technologies. They keep kind of passing, they keep trying to pass new bills. There's active resistance. If there was no Constitution, they'd have banned guns 1850s, right, 1860, right in the Civil War. Sorry, okay, nobody can have guns but us because we're, you know, but they can't. There's one way to get rid of it, and that's having a civil war. So I have to wonder if it's, China. As many people speculate, China's influence in this one. And recently, on a Russian state TV program, the hosts were talking about a civil war is likely coming to the U.S. because the FBI raided Donald Trump. And one of the hosts said, the only question is, which side do we support with weapons? And I think that exemplifies the world. During the American Revolution, France came in with troops and funding. Because they knew it was basically help for them in their fight with Britain, and they knew it was going to be bad for their enemies. During the Civil War, the American Civil War, there was funding coming from external countries to the North and South because there was a bet on who was going to win, and your investments were riding on it.
The CIA's funding regime changes has been doing it for decades. I cannot imagine that the other countries are not, that their versions of CIA are not doing that in the United States. In fact, I would guess that they are. Essentially attempting to create coups within the United States. Probably have been for decades. Yuri Bezmenov talks about like this slow,
sure,
you know, change of culture is the way to get a country to change so you don't have to blow anything up. I don't know if it's the CCP. I can't blame China because they're under occupation by the CCP right now.
Except for Taiwan.
Except for the Republic. The Republic Rather stands Republic. In Taiwan at the moment.
Republic it would be really cool if like, you know, 50 years, we're looking back and like the Republic of China took back over. CCP collapses.
That's the path that we're on.
You think so?
Yeah.
You think Taiwan is eventually going to regain control?
I think the
West
people
Taiwan?
Of China will revolt. They tried in 91, but the CCP mowed down people in Tiananmen Square. I probably will get people responding to me like, Ian, you've got the history all wrong. Cause I am looking at it through an American lens of media, but I remember seeing the tank driving down the street, the guy waving his hands to be like, hey, I'm a Chinese man, I'm sovereign. You don't live here. You don't control me. And the tanks just like try to go around them. Then they ran them off.
I thought he was just holding the bags.
Yeah. And then he was like waving something around, like a suitcase or bags or something like that.
Yep.
So you said that you think it's in the government, like working for the U.S. government, that people have been co-opted by external governance.
Enemies, foreign and domestic.
Why do you think that?
Well, I think that our government has been corrupted, especially the Biden family. I mean, you take a look at all the money that's come out of China to the Biden family. It's come out of Ukraine to the Biden family. I mean, there's serious payoffs there, and they're not the only ones. I mean, a lot of foreign money has flown, has gone to the Clinton family, to even the Romney family. I mean, there's a lot of corruption here, and a lot of people are protecting their financial interests and are selling out the United States. And you have that combination of as Yuri Bezmenov, whatever. The long march through the institutions. They've corrupted our educational system so that you have generation after generation increasingly hating this country, increasingly feeling like, oh, capitalism is really the problem. And so it's a combination of all those things. It's not just a foreign enemy, and it's not just domestic enemies. It's a combination of everything.
Have you seen that movie, Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Yeah.
I really, really liked it. But yeah. It kind of feels like, in a sense, the multiverse is collapsing on us right now. Maybe the Large Hadron Collider needs to stop firing up or something. But you've got 1984, Brave New World, Fahrenheit 451. You got V for Vendetta. You got Atlas Shrugged. Just you name it. And they are all getting mashed together all at once. Mm-hmm. People are commenting right now like, there's not going to be a Civil War. It's World War III. And I'm like, yeah, that too. Yeah. It's just like all happening.
I find it hard not to think about Sri Lanka right now because they just had insane inflation. And then their president was like, no, I'll step down after people stormed his home and office. And then he got on a plane and still hadn't resigned and left the country, got denied entry to Singapore and just kept going on. You know, when you line it up, it's like we also have high inflation and we also have a president that or a former president that looks like he's about to be indicted. I mean, the instability is so parallel to countries that I don't think Americans are used to comparing themselves to, as haughty as that sounds.
And you're saying Sri Lanka is like the dry run?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard not to be like, you were just saying, like, well, Trump has a plane he could leave on. Like,
name on it.
It's right there. I mean, the Sri Lankan president, because he was president at the time, took a military plane. And because he can't be indicted or anything while he's a sitting president, left with it. Like, it sounds crazy. This is while people were storming his office, his house. People were occupying the prime minister's house. Like, it sounds crazy. But at the same time, you know, that kind of stress and chaos that high inflation brings, we are also feeling it in America. It's just on a micro level in comparison. It doesn't mean that things can't get out of hand in the same way. And we're just not used to being compared to countries that we think we are more stable than.
It's that belief that it can't happen here.
It can't happen here. Yeah. We think this all the time.
Even though it literally is
happening.
Mm-hmm. It's happening. I mean, it's fascinating to look at the circumstances in Portland. The various circumstances. I mean, the firebombing of the federal building, but worse still is when Aaron Danielson got shot twice in the chest by that BLM guy. So, I mean, the feds went after that dude and claimed he had it went for a gun. They ended up killing him. I'm like, that's kind of a crazy story. But you take all the street level violence and then you add in the big hits. The former president had his home raided by the FBI. His former senior advisor, I believe Bannon what was Bannon's position?
He was advisor to the president.
Senior advisor, something like that.
Yeah.
Arrested, being charged. Peter Navarro, shackled. These things are, I mentioned this last week, but I'm curious your thoughts, Nick. When we talk to people or when I read history about some of these other countries where civil war happened, a revolution happened, there's like always mass killings and conflict. And they always interview somebody who left. And Nazi Germany always being the easiest example for everybody. Why did... So a Jewish family leaves right before the Nazis rise to power, and why? And they say something like, we saw them dehumanizing and demonizing and thought we better get out of here before it's too late. Then you had many, even Kristallnacht. They you know, the mass destruction of these Jewish businesses, people still stayed, you know, despite everything, but people still fled. When I see stuff like the former president being raided, when I see the FBI saying that symbols of American history our extremism, the Betsy Ross flag, the Gonzalez flag, the Gadsden flag, they're telling you your own history is extremism. Like, these are all signs that in any other country, at any point, other point in history, families were already fleeing, seeking safety in other countries. It's happening now here.
I have a friend who told me a story about talking to his niece about what she learns in school. And he said she'd never heard of the U.S. Constitution. She didn't even know what it was. He said, don't you say the Pledge of Allegiance at school anymore? And she said, no, we say a pledge to BLM and Antifa. We say a pledge to diversity and tolerance, inclusion. And they don't say anything about the actual Constitution of the United States and how this country was founded.
Is this a private school in California? What is this?
It's a school in California.
Is it public school?
I'm not sure about that.
I got to get this pledge. I want a transcript of this pledge.
I know. I've heard of this, too. I want to get a
pledge. This is the most wild pledge I've ever heard of.
No, there's been tons of stories. I think Libs of TikTok had the story.
Oh, man.
Where the teacher was like, we have them all pledged to the LGBT flag or whatever.
It was Buttigieg's husband,
yeah.
Who had a camp where they did that.
That's
where
right.
They had,
wow.
Yeah.
Good point.
So you could probably find a video of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the other thing I was going to say is, the thing about the Trump raid at Mar-a-Lago, it being so galvanizing, to me, it was like I've seen this happening over and over again to private citizens in the United States. That's what my whole movie is about. And a month ago, 6/22 of this year, a woman called me and told me about a raid that happened at her house. This is like 19 months after January 6th. The FBI storms into her ranch. Her and her husband are asleep. It's the middle of the night. They see, they have security on their gate because the, both her and her husband are security people. They, you know, trained in weaponry and stuff. They provide security. And they see people at their gates. And she says, "This isn't a deer, honey. There's people out there." And all of a sudden, they just break down the gates. They come barreling down their driveway. SWAT teams, they're, you know, throwing flashbangs at them. "Come out of your house with your hands up." And they're screaming, "Where's the warrant? What are you here for?" Basically, they terrorize them. They handcuff them. There's a rental property on the same ranch. They flashbang that. They said, thank God the person that rented there wasn't home. But they just basically handcuffed this couple out on their lawn, pulled the vehicles around their house so that they couldn't see what they were doing, and went inside for 6 hours and ransacked their house. And all the time they're saying, "What are you here for? Where's the warrant?" And they go, "We'll show you when we're good and ready," whatever they said. And he finally says, "What are you looking for?" And he says, "We have a picture of you," says this to the husband, "we have a picture of you attacking a police officer on January 6th inside the building." He said, "I never went in the building. Show me the picture." He says, "Nah, we'll show it to you later." He says, "I want to see the picture." And he shows him this blurry picture. He says, that could be anybody. That's not me. That's not me." And finally, after this is all over, he said, "Where's the warrant?" one last time. And they said, "We left it on the couch." And they go in and they look at the warrant that's on the couch, and it says they were looking for three items: a Trump beanie, a Trump gator, and a puffy black coat. Three articles of clothing.
Insane.
And they terrorize these people in this way. So why do they do that? What is the point of doing that? It's there's no justice involved. Three articles of clothing
and fairly common items.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, I was there. Everybody had a puffy coat and like a Trump hat on. I mean, it's like, it's
so generic. It could have been anyone. They specifically wanted to go to this.
But this is systematic. This is not just happening to Trump. It's happening to normal people.
It's why I've been obsessive lately. Another reason of this pardon, why I think a mass pardon is on the horizon, because it's like this Blackstone's formula, man. It's like been echoing in my consciousness. It's better that we let 1,000 guilty people go than somebody has to sit in prison that's innocent.
I don't know about the, you know, to what extent we could do pardons, because I would not agree with, like, you know, Hunter Biden being pardoned or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I will say that I think we took a wrong turn when this country decided that we should hand off our responsibility towards personal protection to external governmental agencies. So it used to be the communities were self-policing. The local militia would take care of their local issues, and there was a duly elected sheriff and maybe a deputy. Nowadays, cities all have their own departments where they have monopolies on how to deal with these issues. And depending on how big the city is, it gets worse and worse. For instance, in New York, where you can't have a gun, you can't defend yourself, violating the Constitution and your rights. I think maybe the issue should just ultimately go back to, you know what? If we need law enforcement and judicial system for probably property crimes to deal with resolving those things. But in terms of, you know, any other kind of violent crime or robbery, think two-way takes care of all that stuff. Armed society is a polite society. People should have their right to protect themselves, and we should restore responsibility to the greatest degree we can to the individuals. And so, you know, I'm mentioning that in terms of the pardoning of people perceived as being violent. I'm kind of like, yeah, you know what? If someone is convicted duly and it's proven they've done this beyond a reasonable doubt by a jury of their peers, by all means, you know, they've gone through due process. They can be deprived of their rights and locked up. But for the most part, I'm kind of like, you know, we don't need all these cops. We don't need to be dealing with this prison system if people were just armed like the Second Amendment prescribes.
Yeah.
Well, you got to protect
vigilantism.
There, you know.
No, it's not. I understand that.
Someone
sure.
with a gun being like, "I thought they were invading my house. I didn't know." Like, that's a big problem. So.
That's why that's property crimes, right? That's why we do need some kind of system. But I think duly elected law enforcement. I'm talking about. We shouldn't be worried about walking down the street.
No, we should have local law enforcement as the first gate for sure. And that should even protect you from federal law enforcement that's gone overboard or state law enforcement that's gone overboard as your local law enforcement. And well, if there are none, then you have to take it on your own shoulders.
That's what happened to these people that I was just talking about. They reached out to the sheriff to say, you know, these people, the FBI, why were you allowing them to violate our rights this way? And the sheriff's job should have been to step in and protect them, but he wouldn't do anything.
Mm. Why?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess he was afraid. I don't know why.
Did he know about it?
He knew about it after the fact. You know, and they asked him for help. And because what happens to these people most of the time is that these break-ins happen, and I've talked to a lot of people that this happened to. The FBI comes and terrorizes them, then breaks down their door and does whatever they do, and then they just never hear from them again.
Do you think
They're sitting there waiting for charges. They hire a lawyer. Charges never come. The lawyer tells them to be quiet, don't say anything because, you know, we don't know what the FBI is going to do. So it just kind of puts a hush over everything, and these people are just sitting there waiting for the next shoe to drop.
Mm. The kind of thing where, like, if they leave the country just on a vacation, that they could get charged for as a flight thing?
Right.
You can't get charged for leaving. That's the thing about Trump's passports, too. I think it's a really weird sign. Because you're right, he wasn't charged. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can leave. I mean, they'll say, you know, don't leave, but you can't tell you what to do. You can leave unless they charge you.
I think they say sometimes, like, when you leave, it makes you look more guilty. Like, they try to scare you into not going anywhere because they can't tell you not to go. But they say, like, well, but in court, it'll look like you left the country on this grand conspiracy or whatever. I was going to ask you if you feel like local law enforcement, for the most part, feels like they have to cede jurisdiction to the federal government. I mean, from what I know, which is very limited on how law enforcement works, often it becomes, once the federal government has, you know, whether it be, you know, the FBI or whatever, that once they get involved with something, they, you know, have jurisdiction. They are allowed to take the lead on whatever case they want, often to the detriment. Local law enforcement often feels like that hurts some of the cases they're working on.
Well, it varies sheriff to sheriff. You know, the sheriff is the local law enforcement that's elected by those people, mm-hmm. and you have strong ones and you have weak ones.
Do you think if we had more, like, a better understanding of federalism and, like, the individual governments of state, people would feel like they could hold their elected sheriffs accountable to opposing the FBI?
Yeah. And a lot of the people who run for sheriff run on that platform.
Mm.
You know, we're going to protect your Second Amendment rights. We're going to make sure that, you know, the federal government can't come in and take your weapons. But then when it happens, they're intimidated and they don't do anything.
Yeah. Do you think in some ways it's because they, you know, I just think about all the some of the COVID regulations and questions about, like, if you get money through Medicare or Medicaid, you have to enforce the things the federal government has said. I wonder if it works in the same way with law enforcement. Aren't sure what pressure is going to be put on them, so they just don't act at all, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure it's like that. It's like the educational system, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was so much federal money tied to mask mandates and to vaccine mandates that the school systems, in order to get that federal money, they decided that
they have to comply. I mean, this is how we got the drinking age to where it is, right? Yeah. They held the highway funding hostage until everyone would agree to make it 21.
Yeah. Thank God they did that, you know, after I had already had my fun.
Where did you grow up?
North Carolina.
Okay. Because there were North Carolina was one of the last holdouts. Or maybe it was South Carolina. I can't remember the story completely. But yeah. I remember it, them being like, no problem, federalism. We love it, except we aren't going to give you any money for your highways unless you comply. I mean, they got really they got shanghaied into doing exactly what the federal government wants, which I think is how, for the most part, you know, so much of this happens. I can only imagine what it's like to be a part of local law enforcement that, you know, worries what kind of funding they're going to get if they say no when they already know, you know, from my understanding, most local law enforcement is understaffed anyways.
Yeah. Well, Sheriff Villanova in Los Angeles County is really one of the better ones. He's been doing a really good job at standing up to some of the mask nonsense, mm-hmm. and all the federal mandates there. But it just varies, you know, place to place.
When you were working on your movie, was, like, the role of local law enforcement in the investigation, did it come up a lot?
In which?
In your movie on January 6th, your documentary.
Well, no, because mostly what we wound up focusing on is the stories of people who, you know, were there on January 6th and who didn't really do anything wrong or violent, mm-hmm. and who subsequently got visited and persecuted, and some of whom are put in jail.
And none of them said, I wish my local sheriff had stepped in, or did they feel like their state law enforcement didn't have anything to do with
it? Well, it all happened so suddenly. Mm-hmm. You know, these things just come at, they come at 5:30 in the morning, 6 in the morning.
Right.
There's no warning. A lot of these people never have been arrested for anything before in their lives. And in that case, you would expect like a phone call. Mm-hmm. You would expect them to say, we'd like to talk to you. Instead, they just bust in.
We do have an update that actually came out just before we started the show. So apologies for not seeing this sooner. This was posted by Kyle Cheney of Politico. The Trump team is publicizing this email, which shows the DOJ obtained 3 passports, 2 expired, not one, as Trump said. No, Trump said, oh, okay, Trump said one was expired. Mm-hmm. And alerted Trump's lawyers. They were recovered by a filter team, which weeds out privileged info. Trump publicized this after DOJ offered them back.
Oh, interesting.
So, yes, but I don't think that means anything, that last point. Like, Donald Trump learned that they took his passports and then complained, they took my passports?
Right.
So the email says, Evan Jim, we have learned that the filter agent seized 3 passports belonging to President Trump, 2 expired and 1 being his active diplomatic passport. We are returning them, and they will be ready for pickup at WFO at 2 p.m. today. I am traveling, but you can coordinate further with redacted, copied above. Thanks. So it looks like they did take his passports, and it was the accident narrative, I suppose, and Trump was correct when he said they took them. And I don't know why it matters that Trump publicized it after they offered them back.
Mm. I mean, I feel like they're trying to say, like, he's so petty. They offered to give him back, but it's like, why did they take them in the first place?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think that that's fair. I mean, I think for the rest of the week, we'll see that a lot. Well, they offered to give it back. It's not that big a deal, but it is. It's a huge deal.
Yeah.
His active diplomatic passport? Are you kidding me? They just like stumbled across it. We're like, we don't know what this is, so we'll just take it with us.
And it's active?
That's can what it
he
says.
As a former president, can he still use a diplomatic passport? I guess he can, right?
Scroll down to the email again. It says active in there, I think.
No, it does. But I'm wondering, can a former president use a diplomatic passport?
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, he must be able to use it, otherwise it wouldn't be active is all I can say to that. I guess, right. It must be privileges for a while. I mean, I don't know. I'm not as well versed in what privileges are extended to the president after leave office.
Like, what is it? Like, if you're in Congress, you retain your security passes for life or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that how it works?
I don't know.
Like, but there are extensions like that. And I mean, to a certain extent, he's still a political figure of the United States. I mean, he still travels quite a bit and is a representation of the country. I can only see that there's some explanation as to why they'd have it.
It's such an unprecedented time, you know. It's like he's not being treated like any former president of the United States. He's being treated like a criminal. So, I don't know.
I was just thinking, our legal system, the main purpose is to protect the innocent. That is why we built it. That's why we have it in place. It is not to find and destroy guilt or evil. It is to protect innocent people. If someone, as a byproduct of the protection of the innocent, is charged, then that happens. But
it should be that way.
Yes.
I don't know if it's always
been. It cannot function any other way. Otherwise, it becomes a self-persecuting immolation.
A lot of it is retribution.
That's a problem. That's a problem. That's when societies consume themselves is with retribution.
There's 500 people or more in jail in D.C. right now. Most of them have not even been charged.
Innocent people because until they're proven guilty, they are innocent.
Right. But they've been holding them for over 18 months.
With no charges.
No charges.
Yeah.
And one of them there, I was told by somebody, a friend of his, he's there because he saw something that happened with Roseanne Boylan, one of the women who died on January 6th. He saw what happened there, and they don't want him telling what he saw.
So he can't write a letter?
I don't know. I'm just telling you.
But
I'm just reporting what I was told. I don't know if any of this is true.
I was going to say, if you're in prison, they're controlling your mail.
You know, it's like you start kind of trying to look for any kind of conspiracy theory, any kind of explanation for why they would hold somebody without charges for 18 months. It doesn't make any sense. There must be some reason.
Well, I'm not a fan of the...
I was just saying, it's exactly what they say a lot of law enforcement does to people of color who are held on bad charges and are not fairly treated. It's, you know, it always bothers me that there's no consistency applied. If you believe in criminal justice reform, you should believe in it for everybody. But it's just, this is worth overlooking, I guess.
Yeah, moral logic isn't the strong point of the left. This is one of the reasons I'm not a fan of the death penalty, is that often people say it's just retribution. And I'm like, I don't know what is served through retribution. You know, I've seen more than enough movies, comics, anime, you name it, cartoons, where the protagonist explains revenge never makes the pain go away. It never solves the problem. I think it was even Batman explained it one time. So I see these stories and it's just like families, you know, I was told by someone, when those families don't get the justice of watching the person who, you know, committed the crime being put to death or whatever, I'm like, I don't know if retribution is going to solve anything for us, or just an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind, you know?
I think it's too much trouble. That's why I'm against the death penalty.
I'm in favor of exile. I say, if you get duly convicted, or, you know, through due process or whatever, we have a big island somewhere and we just, there you go. Like, you've been excised. Like, we're not going to deprive you of your life and liberty, but you've lost all privileges to the society.
Well, they tried that once, and now we've got Australia.
Yeah. We'll see how
No, I think, doesn't like Norway do that? Like, one of those Scandinavian countries.
They've got their own island.
Yeah. I think it's Sweden that does it. They have like a specific island, and prisoners actually at the end would beg to leave it because they want to eventually return.
Beg to leave the island?
Yeah, they do.
Well, of course, they're in jail.
Yeah, but it's also like they're allowed to roam free. Like, it's not like incarceration in America where you're like in a cell or anything like that.
But it's like Tom Hanks in Castaway.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what it ends up feeling like. I mean, in some ways, they feel so disconnected from the world.
Well, but maybe it's more like Escape from New York because you're on an island with a bunch of other convicted
felons. And the winter comes. That must be. It's not a tropical island right there.
But like you're saying, they would rather be in jail in a cell? I mean,
I think it's that they're so deprived from society, having been a part of it for so long. I haven't read that article. Time Magazine did an article with this a long time ago. I know we've talked about it before, and I haven't read it in quite some time, so I don't want to misquote it. But I remember there being interviewing prisoners who were like, I wish I could leave. I don't want to be here.
There are people in Scandinavian countries who want to go to jail because the jails are so nice.
Very nice, yeah.
Yeah, I remember talking with some people I knew because I'd been over there several times, and they were saying, like, a lot of young people talk about it. Just go to jail, you know? Mm-hmm. Because it's comfortable, they take care of you. You have video games, you play music. They'll get you a guitar if you want it. Man, it's like it's perfect.
Yeah,
that's a really bad idea. Mm. Incentivizing crime by rewarding it.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I used to know people. I grew up in a rural area, but we did have a couple, you know, homeless people who would just come the winter, get arrested for some crime where they'd be incarcerated through the winter months because it's really cold where I grew up, and then they get released. And you know, for the most part, they weren't concerned about building a record because their lives were sort of in turmoil anyways, but they got food, shelter, you know, access to electricity during the most dangerous time of the year for the homeless, which is the winter.
There was that story. I can't remember which jurisdiction wanted to do this, but they wanted to pay criminals. I think California's doing
Are they doing it,
or they tried it, or what?
They tried it, but I think they ended the program. I think it was just San Francisco that tried this at one point.
It was like, if you don't commit a crime this month, we'll give you $500 or something like that.
But if you commit a crime, we'll stop paying you, but not forever. Like, right. You could then, like, it's like you went into, like, it's like if your parents stopped giving you an allowance for a little while, and then you're like, okay, we'll try it again.
The problem with that is then the dude is like, I'm about to steal a $1,000 car. You know, it's a junker, but I could flip it real quick. But then I won't get that $500, but I will get a $1,000 car.
Yeah. Opportunity costs.
I mean, it's
exactly. Like,
well, we just need to give them more money. That's what.
Just make them all millionaires. Yeah. Then they'll become corporate criminals. Now with $1 million, I'm going to set up a company that, you know.
I think it's like idealistic. Like they want to think, oh, well, crime only stems from poverty. And if we can fix poverty, then we can stop crime. And for some people, that might be the case. You know, they're stealing because they need to. They don't have the resources to get whatever's going on. But for the most part, that's not actually most motivation for crime. And so we aren't really addressing the problem. We're doing what we want to believe will solve the problem because of our morals. But we lack the understanding. It really bothers me. A lot of studies of, you know, crimes or men and women in general will exclude men who are in prison. And I feel like if we don't understand the people who are committing crimes, then we can't really say what will rehabilitate them. We go off of what people who aren't incarcerated think will fix people.
I thought Charles Manson was a missed opportunity. Part of me, I really wanted to interview him before he died because he never killed anybody. He just told people, go F it up. And then they went and they killed. And they were like, well, you told them, you incited it, Charles. And like they were all blasted out on acid at the time. And like, whether or not, that's what the story is, that he told them to go F it up, said the fool. And then so they went to the woman's house and they F'd it up all right. They killed like four people or something horrible. Mm. But he went to prison for it.
You see that Quentin Tarantino? I think Quentin Tarantino movie.
Yeah, I thought
Brad Pitt killed him.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah, you would think that when the aliens watch the stories of our people, they'll be real so confused.
What was that movie called?
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Is that what it was? Yeah. I like that movie. I thought it was funny.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah.
Who was it?
Brad Pitt was a great character.
Polanski's wife.
Sharon Tate was in the La Bianca house.
I think she was pregnant at the time she got killed. But so Charles never killed anybody, but I think that you could consider that a violent crime, inciting someone to go do a violent crime. But I need to know that. I want to hear the psychology of it. I think that the world deserves to know.
And no one in that group committed crimes because they didn't have enough money. Like, you couldn't have offered that group $500 not to commit crimes. Like, that was their whole thing. They were anti the system and they were anti the government and they had their own, you know, cultish worldview. I mean, it wasn't this UBI that I think it was San Francisco offered that wouldn't have stopped this in this cadence. And that's why I really think that, like, we just do ourselves a disservice by trying to treat people who are in prison like we sort of understand them, but also excluding them from a lot of psychological research because we're like, oh, well, it's such a strange environment. It's unusual. Power dynamics are different there. But you're creating the system, and that's where you're putting people who are incarcerated who then get released, and it starts over again.
I just thought of something funny. So, like, you just said you have to pay him more money, right? Because if he's like, hey, I can steal this $1,000 laptop, I won't get the $500, but I get the laptop. It's worth more, right? And then Ian mentions an opportunity cost. And then I'm like, so they got to pay the guy more money, right? So then the city comes out and says, all right, fine. How about we give you $4,000? Because you're not going to be able to steal enough to cover that. And the dude goes, wow, all right. Now he's walking around with, you know, $1,000 a week. Some other guy goes, he's got $1,000. If I rob him, I'll lose my $500.
It's fractional reserve.
So the city's got to pay him more money.
Right.
Eventually, everybody's just flush with cash and the money's worthless.
Yeah.
And then they start stealing food.
Wait a second.
Yeah. Stupid.
I mean, you've seen those interviews, though, with drug addicts who've moved to San Francisco because they get a stipend, right? They get the money.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They have interviews with him where he goes, yeah, that's why I came here. I moved there from Alabama.
Well, you know what that does, though? Yeah. When they do the census, they get more residents, more seats.
Mm-hmm.
More constituents. And then what they were doing in Northern California was they were interning the homeless, I think it was. They were putting them in camps they couldn't leave and then seizing their assets. Yep.
Nice.
They were like, you cannot support yourself, so now we're taking you, and any money you'd receive is we're in control of, which is insane.
I used to be, like, overwhelmed with compassion that I want to help everybody. That would be – I'll help them all of them. And then I'm like – as I'm growing and watching the universe, like, some people are, I mean, we're animals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're more animal than human, you could say. I mean, humans are animals, but they're more animal than consciousness or something. I mean, we're all consciousness animals, you know, but some of these people are just, like, so in the carnal, you know, base right. reality that it's not impossible, but challenging to get through to them. And then I'm just watching it from afar, and I'm like, well, how do you deal with that?
We're going to go to Super Chats. If you haven't already, would you kindly smash that like button, subscribe to this channel, and share the show with your friends? Head over to timcast.com. We're going to have that members-only segment coming up uncensored at about 11 p.m. And it's funny whenever people like mention, periodically we have particularly uncensored episodes. And sometimes that means like politically incorrect. Sometimes that means crazy subject matter, or we just swear a lot. But that's the after-hour show at timcast.com. And again, smash that like button. Let's read some Super Chats. All right. JAEUFM says, maybe Trump should go to Texas and seek asylum from the governor. I don't think that works that way because it's federal issues, although maybe New York or whatever. Raymond G. Stanley Jr. says, what's this Timcast Records I've been hearing about? Oh. We are launching music. We have a song coming out in about a week and a half. Week and a half.
Are you going to sing a sample right now?
I am not.
No.
I used to sing on Friday nights on Timcast IRL.
Really?
We're planning on bringing that back, actually. But we'll see. We've been talking about it for a while. That's why we have this other extra area set up you never see in the back of the room. The room's pretty big. But with the new place that we're building, the steel frames have gone up at Freedomistan, 40 feet in the center. It's crazy. We're going to have a stage and be able to do live shows. So we'll actually be able to have like musical guests on like Friday nights or something. It's going to
be so cool.
It's going to be really amazing. We'll do a commercial and we'll be like, ladies and gentlemen, here's a band. And then everyone claps and then the camera pans over. No, I'm just kidding.
I hope you keep that the end. Here's a band.
Here's a band.
It'd be like Stephen Colbert then.
Yeah.
Like a nightly show. No, we wouldn't do it like that. We would do like Friday, you know, we used to do at the end of Friday night, we would play some songs. And we're planning on bringing that back. And we're also looking at getting a venue in the West Virginia area so that we can actually do Friday night live, the whole event live, ticket sales extended. This is really cool stuff.
Cool.
All right. No Legs, No Problem TV says, nostalgia watching Days of Thunder. Saw Trooper Nick Searcy delivering strippers to Tom Cruise. This isn't transporting. This is consumption.
That was my first movie.
Nice. Oh, wow. Awesome. How long ago was it?
1991.
Wow.
1990.
How did it change your world to get that role?
You know, I just moved down there from New York. I'd been in New York for 7 years doing theater, and my wife had gotten pregnant, and we moved back to North Carolina because we didn't want to have the baby in our fourth floor walk up, mm-hmm. and started auditioning for little parts there in North Carolina. And went in and auditioned for Tony Scott. I remember my knees were shaking when I auditioned, and I just thought, well, I screwed that up. And then, like, a month later, they called me, and they said, yeah, you got that part.
One, you just auditioned once? No callbacks or anything?
No callback. Wow. And so I went in. Like, the first scene I ever did was with Tom Cruise and Robert Duvall.
Awesome. Wow. That's so cool.
Amazing. Like,
wow.
And it was kind of, you know, it's a nice scene. It's like I kind of pull them over and set them up for this joke, and it's like I had all the lines. Crazy. It was like my little movie where Tom and Robert were extras.
All right. Slappy McCracken says, don't forget, today is Afghanistan Independence Day. Oh, thank you, Joe Biden. Oof.
Oh, yeah. I think there's a Republican inquiry, isn't there? They're pushing some.
They're going to release a report.
They want to know. They keep calling it a withdrawal. I start calling it a surrender, you guys, but you're on the right track.
I think, you know, I agree with you on that, but I kind of feel like, is there a word we can use that's worse than surrender?
Yeah. Capitulation.
Yeah.
Route. But you can have a surrender and a route.
Yeah.
I mean, surrender makes sense, but it kind of feels like he intentionally helped the extremists with the abandoning of Bagram Air Force.
Desertion.
I think that's called
sedition when you help the enemy.
No, that's treason.
Oh, treason. That's what they call
can't
that.
You
treason
be impeached
if
you
intentionally.
For treason? Oh, yeah,
you can be. Okay.
I'm just wondering.
Curious, yeah.
All right, let's see. Aaron Cowell says, Nick, loved your role in From the Earth to the Moon. Question, how was it playing Deke and being such an interesting story?
That was terrific. I got to talk to Bobby Slayton, Deke's widow. Deke was, he was not alive at the time we shot that, but a lot of the astronauts came down. We met like Tim Scott and Dave Scott and some of the other astronauts, but that was a great time. We shot in Orlando, got to shoot out on Cape Canaveral and got to work with, I think I met every middle-aged white actor in Hollywood.
Wow.
At that time, we were all playing astronauts.
So. I just remembered something because of that too. I have just secured 340 Life magazines going back from to the 50s through the 70s. And I went to an antique shop out in West Virginia, and they had a few. One of them was the astronauts from the moon landing, and it was a Life magazine with like this low-res photo printed on, you know, paper magazine. And then I was like, I definitely want to buy that. There were some newspapers. I got one newspaper, Washington Times. Florida calls it for Bush. Really excited about that one. And then the woman there told me that she had a whole bunch of the Life magazines. Went back 340. It's remarkable reading 1962, like what they were talking about. When the draft started for Vietnam, I got the Life magazine from that.
Wow.
Super cool stuff. So we've got all of these boxes, like 7 or 8 boxes of all these magazines. We're going to sort them out by date. I just think it's fascinating and important. And I think I actually want to put together maybe like my thought process on it was put together a report to look at major historical moments from the lens of the modern of their current time based on what we've learned.
Mm.
So, you know, when you go back and start reading about Vietnam in these magazines, they're going to talk about how we were attacked in the Gulf of Tonkin. Now you look at the modern reporting on it, it's like, nope. It's going to be really fascinating to see the differences and disparities between what they were claiming and what ended up being, you know, true or at least accepted as true.
Yeah.
So that's cool stuff. I'm excited for that.
One quick sidebar about From the Earth to the Moon. The coolest thing that happened was that we got invited to show one episode of the show at the White House. So they flew about 6 of us in, and we had a screening there with Bill Clinton and Hillary, and I got to shake hands with Bill Clinton, which is a very interesting story, but it's long.
Right on. Bad B says, Tim and crew got my mom to listen and LOL to Friday's show. Woo. Told her she should tell my sister who listens to you as well. Right on. I appreciate it, man. Thank you very much. Bad B says, Falcon laser book called Troy Rising should be made into that movie you want done. What movie?
I don't know.
Was that me? What movie? Are you a movie? What? Then?
Laser Book?
I don't know.
Troy don't Rising.
All right, let's grab a super chat. Scott Turcott says, They Live, starring Ian, directed by Tim Pool and co. Oh, They Live 2.
Oh.
They're still alive.
They're still here. Alive. Yeah. They Live is awesome. Still you've live. Seen yeah. it, right?
Roddy Piper.
Yeah, yeah.
Never
yeah.
seen it.
You know what it is, though, right?
No.
So it's like he finds sunglasses. When he puts them on, he can see reality.
Oh, that's what these could be. We'll find the sunglasses that Rowdy used in the movie. I'll find them, and I'll be like, whoa.
There's like
Ray-Bans
or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But so like
a sequel's in
that,
the works.
That picture we have on the wall of Nancy Pelosi pulling her face off, mm-hmm. the last panels what the aliens looked like.
Oh.
So that's the joke. These youngsters.
Do you know anything about They Live? Are you?
No.
So he finds
this is such a fun thing to learn about.
The guy that Roddy Piper, the ex-WWF wrestler, finds these glasses, and when he puts them on, he sees, like, billboards that are normally just billboards. They say things like obey or submit. You may see memes from time to time.
Money. I do know this reference, yes.
The money says, this is your God on it.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And then like he looks and he looks at like one of the aliens and they look back and they're like, I think he can see us.
Yeah, like some of the people turn out to be like the NPCs turn out to be aliens or something like that.
When did this movie come out? It sounds like
80s?
A good time.
Old
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
So good. Roddy Piper, man.
It's like a 10-minute fight scene where they just punch each other.
We should have a staff movie night so I can catch up on culture.
Yeah. Before it gets too cold.
After They Live, you have to see Hell Comes to Frogtown. That's another great Roddy Piper.
Frogtown.
Oh, awesome. What was that one about?
Roddy Piper is the last fertile man on the face of the earth, and the earth has been inhabited by frog people.
Oh,
so he's kidnapped by Sandahl Bergman and a group of Amazonian women who are trying to preserve him because his sperm can produce actual human beings instead of frog people.
Oh.
Huh. And so the frog people are trying to kidnap Roddy and kill him.
What is this called?
This also
Hell Comes to Frogtown. It's the best.
Frogtown.
1988.
Timcast movie night double feature.
Yeah. Roddy Piper plays Sam Hell. That's his name.
Maybe we can do like this is one of the reasons I want to do a venue because we could do special events where we like play a movie and then comment and like hang out.
That'd be super fun.
Mystery Science Theater, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think they made a sequel. Hell Comes
Did they really?
I think so.
All right.
I have like a strong no sequels policy, but that one sounds like
sounds
it might
great.
Be worth it.
I'm telling you.
Alien 2 is good.
Jake Riley says, wrong. Trump has said something terrible is going to happen to this country. Don't sensationalize. You reported earlier. Trump said terrible things are going to happen if this country's temperature isn't brought down. Fair point. I do think it's comparable. I think it's a similar statement, but I do respect the precision in making sure you get it correct. So I will accept that. All right.
You were right, Nick. Return to Frogtown is the sequel of Hell Comes to Frogtown.
Is Rowdy Rowdy
Thank
in it?
You. I don't think Pipe. Oh, yeah. No, I don't think Rowdy's in
it's
it.
It's not Pipe.
Rowdy,
oh, if he's not in it, then he can't be in our triple feature movie night.
My wife dances in California with Sandahl Bergman, who's the star of Conan the Barbarian and also Hell Comes to Frogtown and All That Jazz. She was the lead dancer in All That Jazz.
Oh, cool.
Oh, this was a good one. Eli M. says, Tim, with Crowder coming to Charleston, West Virginia, can we expect him to make an appearance? Instead of a civil war, could destabilization be prepping us for a switch to fusion? Oil no longer matters and neither does the dollar. That's big news. Charleston is very far away. Was it 4 or 5 hours?
It's 6 hours away, I thought.
Four?
Yeah. But Hannah Claire knows better.
I think it's... well, it's probably 5 from where we are.
Yeah.
So that's not that. Like,
a little further.
Crowder's not going to be that
close.
Yeah,
so Crowder's actually coming to Baltimore, which would put him closer. Yeah,
He's
Baltimore's coming through our range.
That's right. He'll be around here.
Crowder. We got to have Crowder on.
Yeah. No one should be able to come to West Virginia without coming
Exactly.
At the very least, we got to show Crowder the studio and invite him to come down.
Steve-o.
And we got these great little cookies that say Step on Snack and Find Out that I ordered. They're really fantastic. They're 130 calories each, so they're nightmarishly bad for you.
Super dish.
But the other thing, too, is we're reaching out. We reached out to Jimmy Dore. I'm really excited for Jimmy. He'll also be in the area, so maybe we'll be able to coordinate with him as well.
Beautiful.
Jimmy's
human.
Great.
Yeah, one of the best. Hey, and shout out to the guy that mentioned Fusion. They just released an article exclaiming that they have tested and confirmed ignition, which is the first time the system's putting out more energy than is going into it. Although I don't think they were able to keep it on.
It's capturing the energy is the challenge.
Right. It's giving off so much heat. Now they got to figure out a way to restore, to get the heat, to turn it back into electricity to keep the current going.
But this is going to be big. If they can stabilize, normalize and, you know, get fusion out there, it's going to be nuts. It's going to be crazy bonkers free energy. Basically, like not free, but like the energy costs will become so insanely cheap that you're not even going to notice. And the climate change people probably should freak out, because what will happen is there's not going to be carbon emissions from it. But it's this energy will ramp up production to such an insane degree. Like, fusion's legit, man. This is going to be crazy. The Bahamian Rain Man says, given her status as a moderate Democrat, would it be completely insane for either DeSantis or Trump to pick Tulsi Gabbard as their running mate, or hell, even Bernie Sanders? It'd be such a reach across the aisle with an olive branch in hand. I mean, Tulsi just, didn't she just host for Tucker Carlson?
Yeah, she did last week.
So,
anything could happen.
We can call her a moderate Democrat, but like, you know, Tulsi's in the same camp we are here. As far as the left is concerned, she's far right. You know what I mean? As for Bernie, the World Socialist website called Bernie Sanders a nationalist capitalist. Huh. So, you know, there's that.
Bernie is old, though. I just want to put that one on the table. He'll be like old. 83 at the next inauguration. Like, maybe he doesn't. Maybe he'll just be an advisor.
Yeah, he missed his opportunity to go independent in 2016 after the DNC screwed him over. He should have went independent. That was his chance. I don't think he's got
a shot. There's too much money in it for him to stay put.
Mm-hmm. All right. Taxi says, from John Tester, DMT intern, ours losing both Georgia seats in 2020 was worst case scenario. Dem strategists didn't believe reps would F up that badly. I mean, yeah, I didn't think so either. And then this gave the 50-50 to the Democrats with the tiebreaker to Kamala, and now they got the Inflation Reduction Act.
The Deflation Act, can we please?
Yeah. Did you see what the, was it ABC said to Jean-Pierre or whatever? That it was like Orwellian?
What is it?
He's like, how can you call it the Inflation Reduction Act when they're going to be spending all this money? It's Orwellian. He said something like that. You got to look it up, because I was reading about it.
What was her response?
Oh, probably, huh?
Yeah. What's Orwellian? Yeah,
how could you say that to me?
I don't know what that means.
Orwellian?
It's not Orwellian because George Orwell didn't write it.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Let's grab some super chats.
She's such a wild press secretary. I don't know what to make of her.
Oh, I was doing a Kamala Harris voice.
I'm really excited. I'm really excited for this. Prior Divine says, thank you for having the CEO of Public Square on last week. It helped me feel less alone at the edge of the mind. Available on Amazon now. I heard that you were a culture building. I wanted to join. No, we did a segment on Public Square. Have you heard of Public Square, Nick?
Yeah, Lydia was telling me about
it. Yeah, this very topic. What is this strange squeaking?
Hear that?
Are we being invaded by aliens?
Aliens, probably.
What is it?
Did you do this? Did you bring the aliens here?
We're going to contact Rogan first.
What was that? We sent him a postcard. You're just like, we're on at 8 if you can stop by.
Is it a squeaking?
Yeah.
No, that was like a weird metallic thing. I don't know what that was.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, Public Square, we did a segment about it. The segment's got 206,559 views.
I told Michael.
So this is fantastic.
Yeah.
Public Square is an app where it shows you businesses that believe in American values. So if you're a business, you can sign up and say, I agree with these stated values of the platform. And then it's stuff like the Constitution is good and should be protected, things that we agree with. And then you can go and give your money to people who don't hate you. Absolutely incredible. So when I saw that the segment about it was doing really, really well, that just makes me feel really great, because it means more people are going to learn about it. And we've got a bunch of restaurants and businesses around us that are on the app. So I'm like, that's where I'm going from now on.
Yeah.
And if there's somewhere I have to go, like a hardware store or something, I'll ask them. Mm-hmm. We got a barbecue joint that they're on the app. Super exciting. It's West Virginia, though, so this whole area is MAGA country.
It's when you're traveling that it becomes important, I guess. Yeah.
Hollywood needs that app, but there'd only be like two or three things on it.
No, it's huge.
Yeah.
So are you living in Hollywood?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Check out the app, because when we pulled it up, there's actually a ton of businesses.
Oh, cool.
Now, obviously, out of the 50,000 or so businesses that might be there, you might find 500. Hey, but you'll get what you need, and you'll get it from good people.
Also, did you need 50,000 choices anyways? Better to narrow down the pool.
That's fair choice. Fair point.
Oh, if you guys want to watch that full episode, it was Michael Seifert. It was the guest. He's the CEO of Public Square.
A good episode, too.
Yeah. Really fun, yeah.
All right. Let's grab some super chats. Angel Torres says, please get Jimmy Dore on the show. Then we can have Timmy Jimmy Power Hour from Nickelodeon. Shout out to Graffy and Ian. we've reached out to Jimmy before. I've been on his show before. It's really hard to get people on your show when they do their own show, because he does his own show. But he's doing a comedy tour. He'll be on the East Coast. So I reached out to him, and it's possible. It would be so amazing to have Jimmy on. It would be a really great show. You know what? When is Crowder going to Baltimore?
I think in December.
How amazing. Oh, okay. So not at the same time. Yeah. But it would be absolutely hilarious if we had Jimmy and Crowder at the same
time.
That'd
be so fun, yeah.
That'd be great. I'd be like, let's talk about what we agree on. Guys, calm down. We're agreeing. Come on.
We're agreeing on this part.
It would be very loud, I feel like.
Yeah. Definitely.
Jack's BFF says, Tim, I dare you to put on Twitter that Biden should pardon the January 6 Americans incarcerated. I dare you. Okay.
He dared you.
He dared you.
You're going to have to do it now.
Why wouldn't I do it?
Because, well, I guess you'll see what will happen.
He dared you.
I'm phrasing it as a mass pardon of all over the place. I don't want it to seem like a political move. It's just got to be an American move.
Guys are watching. Sorry, Tim,
but then he would have to admit that they're Americans.
All January 6th.
Yes, and that crimes have been committed. In order to pardon Hunter Biden, for instance, you got to at least admit that there was a... Well, actually, could you pardon someone that hasn't committed any crimes? Could I just say, Hannah Claire, you're pardoned?
You can.
Especially if they're in jail. Yeah, you can pardon them.
But, like, that's... Okay, so I could pardon... What if he was like, I pardon everyone, that would just be like... Maybe like this guy's gone and completely insane.
Maybe.
All right, so here's what I'm writing.
He's doing it. You can't dare Tim and not take it seriously.
I like that he called that dare. He's tweeting it right now. Honor question.
Why would I not tweet this?
Yeah.
Well,
Biden should pardon all January 6 defendants as an olive branch to help lower the political conflict and escalation.
That's a great idea.
In the U.S.
I like
then underneath, right? I was dared to do this.
No,
I mean, like,
I'm just kidding.
I don't know. Like, if I literally say it on this show, why wouldn't I tweet it as well? I will say the funny thing is there are people who only know me from Twitter. And
oh, really?
Their view of me is hilarious.
Yeah. It's your Twitter profile, basically.
Yeah, because I tweet nonsense half the time. Like, I usually tweet the opposite of what I'm trying to say because it flies in the face of the censors. Or like, okay, you know what? I can't mention the thing I was going to mention because we'll have to mention it on the after show. It has to do with a greyhound in France. And so if you're familiar with what that story is, you understand why I'm not, but let's do it, Ian. But, this after show is going to get really bad.
Oh, boy.
And it's going to include art from George Alexopoulos.
Of course it will. Of course.
Do you know what story this is?
No.
Okay, well, I can't.
Don't want to spoil it.
I can't wait.
Oh, yeah,
can I allude to it?
Nope.
I just want to give the tip of the iceberg.
No.
Okay.
Is it about a dog?
Hold back.
Yes, it's about a dog.
Okay.
You're going to love it.
I'm going to say it as professionally as possible.
Oh, I think I know what this is. All right, I know what this is.
In an article published by The Lancet, we've encountered the first human-to-dog transmission of monkeypox. I will leave it there.
Okay, leave it there.
And elaborate.
I remember this, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man. It's not an issue for YouTube. It's an issue for family-friendly. People might have kids watching. We'll go to the members only talk about this because
you don't have any kids that are members only.
Well it's
then
just
really
it's just we segment it in such that like people know if they turn this show on, we try to avoid we try to keep it like like if it was any other late night show.
Right.
But the after hours one, it's like you know what you're getting into.
Yeah, put your kids to bed. We're gonna go to town now.
All right. Cam Girl Asuna says, Tim talks about fleeing and being nonviolent, but what is the viable alternative? If this, the last best hope of freedom on earth, falls, we have nowhere to flee to and no one to defend us. I will have liberty at any cost. I'm not advocating for fleeing the country. I'm pointing out that there have been points in history where people fled the country. There have been points in history where people stayed and defended their country and won. I'm just saying we're at that point. Like, obviously, I'm not leaving, you know. But when you start seeing the previous administration be arrested, investigated, all that crazy stuff, that is like that happening is not a red flag. Well, it is a red flag. It's a very large 40-foot tall red flag with a sickle and a hammer on it. But it is like we're well past the point where you should be looking for red flags.
Hmm.
They have raised the flag up very high for everyone to clearly see at this point.
No, it's not warning signs anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. Now at this point, it's like we're watching them put the flag up. All right. Jesse Bear says, according to Robert Barnes, Trump had a blanket declassified order in place during his presidency. Any documents Trump took out of the White House was automatically declassified. And I'm pretty sure that's the case regardless of if he even says it. He's allowed to just take stuff and be like, it's not classified, I'm taking it.
Can he say like, here, this is declassified for you, but anyone else that finds that it's classified?
I don't believe so.
Okay. No.
I feel like that's more like granting someone temporary security clearance, which would probably be much harder to keep track of, right? From what I know about security clearances, which is minimal. But you know, you would be like, oh, it's okay for you to see it right now. Like, it's either it's classified or it's not.
Got it.
Eric Boyd says, Nick, do you watch The Orville? I think you said no, you didn't see it. I saw the detransitioning episode Tim talked about. It was about detransitioning for sure, but they thought they told a transitioning story. Fan since 7 days. Eric, I disagree. So I think it's a bit of a cynical view. The Orville, for those that aren't familiar, it's Seth MacFarlane's space show, kind of like Star Trek. They did an episode early on in 2017 in the second season where one of the alien members of his crew, alien officers, wants the doctor to perform a sex change operation on his baby because his baby was born female, but their planet doesn't like females. It's like 99.999% male of society. So any child born female, he describes it as if a human was born with a cleft lip, you would repair it, would you not? This is the same thing we see. And Seth MacFarlane literally says, you want to perform a sex change operation on a baby? That is unethical, immoral. You can't do that. And so what ends up happening is the child grows up, and in the later season, this new season, which is the jokes are all gone, it's very serious, the child says, I'm not supposed to be this way. I want to go back to the way I was. And there's a conflict over, and then ultimately they detransition the kid back to female. But here's the reason why I don't agree with they thought they were telling a transitioning story. The argument there is Seth MacFarlane was trying to be pro-sex change for children. I don't think so, because the later story is that females from the planet of age are smuggling females off the planet to prevent sex changes of minors. Like, they're quite literally saying 17, 18, 20-year-old, whatever, adult females are being smuggled off the planet so they don't have to undergo sex changes. Like, they were outright saying, like, you could argue that they were saying it was wrong to force a sex change on a minor or whatever, but the story was not that they were telling people to transition. I think it was really, really good. I think the show episode Domino, it's like the ninth episode, it's an hour and 20 minutes long. It's a movie, basically. It's like a Star Wars, Star Trek kind of movie. And it was really, really well made. Now, I have some critiques, Seth, about what I think you should have done with this story. No, it was really, really good. I'm really impressed. I think Orville's a fantastic show. It's a bit wokey in some aspects, but I'm fine with that as long as it's like actually trying to address certain issues and explore them. So I'm a fan. I think it's great. I think Seth MacFarlane's got really awful political views, but you know, he did a good job on this one.
Scott Grimes is a fantastic actor.
Yeah, that's what's his? I forgot the character's name.
Well, this here says Lieutenant Gordon Malloy.
Malloy.
Ah, Malloy. Typecast as an Irishman.
Mm-hmm. I just got to say, though, I don't like that they have him sing and play guitar all the time because it's really out of place and takes up too much time. But, like, Seth. Like,
yeah, Seth, get you know, on it.
Grimes, he's a great singer. I'm pretty sure he does The Son on American Dad.
Yeah.
Steve.
Steve. Yeah.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, he was in Band of Brothers, and I thought he was one of the best parts of that movie.
Huh.
Highly recommend it.
Eddie says, just went solar last week, so of course fusion will get cracked now. Yeah, solar's still good, though, to keep you off the grid, you know what I mean? So you don't got to worry about it. But, man, I'm super excited for fusion. Now, it would be really great when they get miniaturized fusion and we run our cars off of it, and then your car runs forever, basically.
Pour a little water in your tank and then get a little fusion.
Identify with that guy's feeling.
Then they'll
find
a way to sell the water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, uncontrollable power supply is an interesting problem. I'm sure they've been considering for decades.
All right. Terrence Grimes says, North Carolina here. In the beginning, I hated hearing Ian. He's grew on me so much, the show isn't complete without him. Rock on, brother.
Oh, hell yeah.
Michael Malice told me. He said, at first I didn't understand why you had Ian on the show, but now I really get it. And I was like, I don't know what he thinks that means. I don't know. I was like, I just think the simple thing is, while there's obviously like people are on the fence about Ian, some people are often saying, you know, they don't like what he's saying. People say they love what he's saying. I think one of the problems a lot of shows face is like, I don't want to make a homogenous show. You know, like we need somebody who is looking at things very, very differently. Someone actually had a really great super chat last week where they said Ian often reflects the public very well in how he sees things and thinks about them. I think that's great.
You're the man of the people.
That's it. Bring me to the top.
But they were just basically saying he's got like a normie perspective on politics.
Compared to you, for sure. I don't study this stuff before I come in, kind of on purpose. It is nice to know what we're talking about before we get into it, but I like learning about it in real time. I think that we talk about such like hot topics and hard, like you look around the world's like a powder keg in a lot of ways, that I want to at least make people laugh or bring joy in some way while we're talking about this, because this stuff needs to be talked about.
You haven't made me laugh once.
Well, you're impossible. You're an impossible target, Nick.
I know, it's true.
Gotcha.
Derek D says, your local sheriff and police get huge amounts of money and equipment from the feds. The last thing they're going to do is go against the federal government. Yep. Mm-hmm. That is true and correct. When people talk about the militarization of police, they're often referring to heavy federal funding and subsidizing, which puts them basically in a de facto chain of command. Yeah. But they're also talking about like MRAPs and, you know, heavy armor and weapons. I don't think the issue is militarization. I don't care if a cop has armor and a rifle. I care that he's not suppressing my rights. By all means, you got armor and a rifle, the people got armor and rifles, good. Somebody shows up and wants to commit a crime, I hope you can stop them. If you see a regular person, you know, driving their car and then you illegally search their car, now we got a problem. Mm. All right, let's see. We'll try and grab one more here. MF says, hey, Tim, you always talk about how it's so important that we make art and culture. Well, hopefully I've done just that and need your help getting the word out. It's called Overdrive. Michael Fine, TY. What is that? Hmm. Is that your things that we're working on? Okay, well, there you go, Overdrive. I think Cast Castle is finally coming out tomorrow. Pilot episode. It is basically behind the scenes with jokes. For people who are big fans of it, I'll just, you know, reiterate the last video we did. It's just not sustainable. To have the degree of editing, filming, and everything we want to do, the show was making like $1,000 a month, but it was costing substantially more than that. And there were people saying things like, you were making money off it, you know it, and I'm like, no. But I don't like the idea of having 125,000 subscribers and then just being like, meh, didn't make enough, so all of you fans, you get nothing. I was like, okay, maybe if we can convince 500 to 1,000 of those subscribers to just pay $10 a month as members to watch that and all our other content, we can keep the show going. And I think that's a better route to go, considering we do want to do a vlog. We do want to film fun stuff and funny stuff here. We got to find a way to make it work. And it was just getting too expensive and we were subsidizing it. So maybe this will work now and create a new reason for people to become members at timcast.com. Check out the After Hours show that's coming up. And it's going to be really, really unfamily friendly. So you're being warned. It's about a dog. Yeah. Smash the like button, subscribe to this channel, and share the show with your friends. Again, timcast.com for the members only show. Nick, do you want to shout anything out?
Yep, Terror on the Prairie. Go see it at dailywire.com. It's a terrific movie, Western, and I'm the title role. I'm the terror.
Yeah.
That's you, the terror.
Horrifying.
I'm Hannah Claire Brimlow. I'm a writer for timcast.com. Encourage you guys to check it out for your news every day. Click on the read tab. You can see stuff from me and a bunch of other people. And this week, I am co-hosting Pop Culture Crisis with Brett. So watch me hostily take over his show several times a week at 3 o'clock. It's live every day. And you can check me out on Instagram. I'm hannahclaire.b.
Yeah, if you go to timcast.com at 3 p.m., you will see the live player right there up top.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when Timcast IRL goes live, boom, right there on the front page of timcast.com. We are exploring trying to get the apps going again, so stay tuned for all that.
All right. You guys follow me at iancrossland.net if you want to get through to me on social media. That's the portal, and I'll see you there. Nick, fantastic to see you again. You look so happy, by the way.
I do.
Staring at me. You look like you wanted to choke my neck or something.
No.
You didn't make it
I
laugh. Love
you,
man.
I just like you very much. You're just not very funny.
Oh, I like thank you for being honest. And it's always great to see you. Thanks again for doing Capital Punishment.
Yes.
And for pioneering this.
Capitalpunishment.locals.com. That's where you can see it.
Cool, dude.
Yeah.
See you later.
Thank you.
Guys, please don't make me go through this episode after the show tonight alone. Come join us at timcast.com. I'm scared I'm not going to make it. You guys can follow me on Twitter and minds.com at sourpatchlids as well as sourpatchlids.me.
I'm just warning all of you.
Oh, no.
We are not going please to mince help words starting off help this members only show. We're going right for it. So thanks for hanging out, and we'll see you all over at timcast.com.
Bye, guys.